生と現実に一石を投じて個性を磨け結界悩むなんだよまた一つ消去頭からケツまでそれが我がエンタメだ
Hello, you're listening to the Taco Spirit Animecast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo!
Today's episode is our re-101 on anime. Basically going back through our anime 101 that we did, I don't know, what was like that 23rd episode?
Yeah.
23rd episode?
It's been a minute.
Yeah, so we were kind of looking up ideas, and Chris was like, hey, we should probably kind of revamp our old 101s now that we're... Shoot. I think we're almost at our 10th year doing the podcast. So 10 years later, I think we should probably redo it. It's funny because when I was looking through it, I'm like, I don't know. People can technically go listen to our 23rd episode, and it's pretty much going to be mostly the same content. I think it was a lot of the bits that you had in there about getting into anime, which is what we originally went through, and how that's technically changed quite a bit since 10 years ago. There's a lot more available. Of course, you do have a decade worth of anime that could be possible options to suggest to people. Of course, I did an entire top 100 of the last decade that you can kind of technically go through, but a lot of it really isn't geared, of that podcast isn't really geared towards this is specifically for somebody new. And a lot of those in there are probably a little bit too far a stretch for somebody new to jump into. So, yeah, I guess there's a lot of worth in this too.
I think so.
So, and it's good for our new listeners.
Not to mention,
don't want to go back and scroll all the way through iTunes to find the 23rd episode, which we're in the 500 area. So, quite a bit.
Not to mention the fact that when we first started, we weren't that good at doing what we're doing now. Not that we're that much better.
A lot of
Chris
clearing his throat. Yeah, I listened to it today. A lot of Chris clearing his throat, and
there was some funny points in there.
There was a lot of good funny points in it. I almost was tempted to bring. I was going to look for our outline, but I don't know if we did it in our same doc.
It's in there, yeah.
But I was like reading goofy quotes that Chris had wrote out that were goofy. So it's still worth going to check out. It's just kind of like I admit we are technically different in how we handle. One being that we don't have Chris clearing his throat in the middle of the podcast. A lot of ums that we had going on, we were a little bit, maybe some people would see more cringy and goofy, but it's a different attitude, I guess, from then to now. Because, I mean, it's 10 years.
I'm not that bad. That was in there.
Yeah. It's a story that tells you that, hey, I'm not that bad. So I think that's where that kind of originated from. I don't know.
It was in that episode.
So, yeah.
Because we were talking about psychological thrillers. And watching a psychological thriller, and you compare the person that's going through all that
crap. That's a cute character, and you wonder, why is this person here? Yeah, self-reformation of that you're not that bad of a person.
Yep.
So, yeah, like I said, it's technically worth listening to if it's your kind of humor. But, we've changed a little bit. I don't know if it's for the better or for the worse, but it's a lot. It's been a lot of fun either way for those last few 10 years. So yes, it is a Chris outline, so I hope that Chris is ready to take the wheel, so to speak.
Well, I don't know if you caught it, but I named it Re-101, Starting Life in Another Anime World, or another anime.
Starting World. Anime Life in Another World.
Yeah.
I can read
you
it.
See, you see what I got and I did there?
No.
No, you didn't?
Oh, damn, no. So we died?
I thought it was a good
Does that mean that we died?
Maybe.
Man, where's Rim at?
Anyway, this is Anime 101 Redux, like Andrew was saying. I did want to give, I kind of did this in the first one. I want to do it again in this one. When I started in the fandom officially, we've had a lot of discussion at some point on, did we watch anime when we were younger? If it's not, whether or
does
not
does it count if you didn't know it was anime?
Yeah, exactly. And so yes, technically we watched some anime when we were younger, but again, does it count? But when I officially joined the fandom, I was in the army at the time, and internet was just hitting its stride. The internet started in 95, somewhere around there. I was in the army in the just before 2000. So like I said, it was just hitting its stride, and it really hadn't kind of, it was doing some, you could download some anime, but not very much. And at the time there was websites going up like crazy, and you could just load up on DVDs. I went online at one point and bought nearly $1,000 or just over $1,000 worth of anime, just without even thinking about it. I just grabbed them. At the time, it was kind of hit and miss. Sometimes you got some good animes. Sometimes you got some horrible animes. But that was the way that you did it.
That was how things went back then. You just seen an anime character and you said bye, and then bye. You found out later.
Even to this day, we've got some of those DVDs up in our collection up there. Quite a few of them that they're all scratched to crap. I'm amazed at how some of them still play sometimes. Some of them do the skipping thing, but you know, they are what they are. But at any rate, you couldn't really return a lot of them, so it's not like you could do much of anything about it. Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you what actually triggered you to start watching anime? Because I know that I was doing anime in junior high, and it wasn't until just before I got to high school that you had, of course, graduated and you were off to the army.
Because I was thinking the same thing.
Did I influence you at all?
I know, because I know I really, really love Tenchi. But Tenchi would be after I got back, because I don't think that I got into Tenchi.
I mean, it's an unfortunate thing, but me and Chris weren't really that close growing up. I mean, we were at odds quite a bit. We did have our moments together. I mean, he was my big brother, and he would kind of show me things. And I don't ever remember us ever talking about anime back then. The only memory I have of you and me in anime, the earliest memory I have of you and me in anime together, was when I visited you when you were in the army. And I took a Greyhound all the way across the country. It was like 2 or 3 days of miserableness. I cannot express how bad a bus trip across the country is. But when I got there, it's literally, we had a connection in gaming.
Right.
That was our connection. I don't remember the anime thing until, that's the only memory I have, the earliest memory I have, is coming in there, and you had these bookshelves full of just like, was it Mouse? I think you had Armitage, just tons of anime. Of course, the Tenchi Muyos. I was in heaven at that point. I'm like, we're going off to the store that they had on the base, and we're buying Bloody Roar, and you're getting me like 5 memory cards for some reason. And I was on top of the world when I went and visited him. I mean, we're getting like tons of games. We're going back to his place. We're driving in his car that bounces up and down like a trampoline all the time because the suspension was terrible.
That stupid thing.
And we get back to his house and we're freaking
just sounded like a bed, an old squeaky bed when it bounced.
Yeah. And I'm watching anime that I guess technically at that time it was okay for me to watch, but yeah, like Mouse was very etchy. I don't know if it was like borderline hentai. I just remember that stupid logo, Mouse. All these shows we're watching, we're playing like tons of games, and it was a blast. That's like the earliest memory I have of us watching anime together. I don't remember anything before then, and I don't know when the connection happened. And that's what puzzles me.
Yeah, because the when it comes to Tenchi, I don't know. I know I remember the tapes. You had the tapes.
The earliest one I had was Tenchi in Love, because I got that from my friend Joey.
Right, from Joey.
And he was, of course, the one that technically introduced me to anime, by the way.
I do know that I had a lot of anime that I had gotten when I was in the Army. But I don't remember how the two connect to each other.
Yeah, was it like, Chris, hey, you need to check out Tenchi Muyo? Was it Chris watched the VHS that I had of Tenchi Muyo?
That's
Love?
What I think happened.
Because I had Tenchi Muyo Love, and I had one of the OVAs. I had just one, because it was the one that had the Sasami special in it.
I wonder if I went home on vacation one time and ended up watching it while I was there, and then came back and then officially got into it. Because that's like I said, Tenchi seems to be my gateway.
That's the thing, I think Tenchi was the link. I just don't know where that link was.
It's confusing, and it's interesting to actually find out that we kind of both found anime at the same time, mm-hmm. even though we went our own routes to get to the same place.
Yeah, I know that's the thing, that's what was my question, is really what did you run into? Was it the internet, and you're running the internet and you ran into anime and you're like, I need to buy this stuff?
No, honestly, I think it was. No, because it would have been at Rose Terrace, because I did in one of my things down here talking about how the difference is from now compared to what we came from. When I first was into the fandom, Blockbuster and Video Zones, those were still a thing. Mm-hmm. And going into the movie store to get anime, you almost had to go to that little section.
There was a kid section.
There was a kid section.
At least the one that I went to. They were always kid section. It was like, you guys don't know, this isn't supposed to be here.
the one in Kentucky, it was closer to the adult section. And so you had to...
There was somebody that worked at the store that knew, hey, this is not for kids. I actually read the back of the thing. It says it's not for kids. Or I actually watched this with my kids and realized it was not for kids.
But yeah, so my experience was, when I would go and get the anime, it was always there. And so people would look at you kind of funny. But yeah, that would be in when I was still in the family part of the base. So it does seem like that would have been... Before I had to have met James, because I do know that James introduced me to some other game or some other anime that were more popular, I guess, would be, because that would lean into Ghost in the Shell and a couple of other ones. So yes and no, it's funny that I still stand by the fact that Tenchi was my gateway, but it still wasn't quite... I still think that my official show would be Record of Lotus, because that was when it was introduced to me as anime. This is what this is. Tenchi was still just kind of, oh, that's a fun cartoon that's just for adults. And that's the way I looked at it.
Yeah. And it's funny, because the, for people, for my side of things, I didn't really know what anime was. Of course, again, we technically watched anime that were, you know, Robotech and stuff like that. We just didn't know that they were anime. The moment that I was explained what an anime is was my friend Joey. And that was, he was my friend that literally, whatever he wanted, he seemed like he could get. He had all the great consoles. He had all this crazy... He often went to places that had crazy imports. We went to one store that had the Japanese version of the N64 before it was even in America. And he was deeply entrenched in anime. He was popular enough that he could walk around school with a cute anime chick on his shirt, and he didn't care. I didn't really have as much bravery as he did. But he was the one that really introduced me to that. And he was the one that, when I went over to his house, we watched Akira, we watched Tenchi Muyo, all this stuff in the early 90s that essentially was what was the introduction for me. Going through all the Tenchi Muyo, watching the Tenchi movies, Akira, all that kind of stuff. Armitage, that was my introduction to this is what really anime is. And it was stuff that was completely blowing me away at the time. So, but yeah, it was from that point, after I graduated, I kind of slipped away from all that kind of stuff after graduating high school. And it wasn't until I got a little bit into my work that I started going, oh, I have the money to buy this stuff now. And that's when I bought my, thank goodness, I bought my Neon Genesis Evangelion DVD set that I'm so thankful that I bought at the time because you can't get it anymore. But that was the other kind of thing that bugged me because, of course, after that, kind of working at a part-time job, well, it was technically full-time, but working all that those hours, getting pretty much all the anime that I wanted, I didn't really buy a huge collection. And then I moved again, and it wasn't until when we started up our original site was Cabot Wolf, and then got into Talk of Spirit where I actually started kicking back into anime and really getting into it, which was 2010, I guess.
Has it been that freaking long?
No, I think in the that long. Well, it would have been like, what?
It seems like
it 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, I know it's been a while, but man. Because I was thinking about when you first said 10 years, I was like, dang. It seems like it was like 2012 or...
That what?
That we started... Okay.
It was about 2010.
If we're talking Cabot Wolf, then yes. Yeah, that would definitely be 2010
or something like that. I thought we started that stuff at like 2008, and then we did that for about a year or so, and then we did Otaku Spirit. Because we were doing games, by the way, people. We were doing games and anime at the same time, and then we finally officially...
We tried.
He was doing all the anime shows, and I was playing video games most of the time, so I was heavier on the games, and he was heavier on the anime. And at some point, I kind of started going back towards his direction and started watching all the shows, too. And then that's when it just became Otaku Spirit.
Yeah.
So. But no. And here's the troubling thing. Again, so happy I kept my Neon Genesis Evangelion and I never lost that set. And you managed to save the Tenchi Muyos, pretty much, and some Dragon Ball. Kept Armitage. What the hell happened to the rest, Chris? I remember you had it over here because I remember you had the boxes full of it, and I think at some point
don't forget there was a lot of Disney films in there too.
Yeah.
But yeah, most I don't know. It just slowly disappeared through time.
And of course, in the time between,
but don't forget a lot of those were like $25-$30 each at the time.
Yeah, that's the troubling thing. That's really is the what happened to those, Chris. I think the Evangelion set was like $400 or $500, something like that.
Yeah,
it was pricey.
I wouldn't doubt it. I think Tenchi by itself, if you consider what's up there, you're talking good.
Well, now they're technically released in DVD and Blu-ray. They're probably not worth as much.
Oh, but
I mean, when you bought them,
yeah, when I bought them, yeah. I mean, you're talking. Each one of those, I mean, there's 4, 8 there. That's
and
$200
how many episodes
there.
On each?
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing, because like I said, I traded to get Tenchi Muyo in Love. The Sasami special one that I bought at the store, that's literally, I think, 2 episodes on that VHS. And that was, it was $30-$40. That's how anime was back then. So again, it's one of those you kids appreciate what you have moments. Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn.
But
I've been doing anime since you were in diapers.
I was paying the same price people paid for rent to buy one VHS with 2 episodes on it. That was literally the stigma back then of the otaku in the Western Edge was. You literally had to spend your rent on 2 episodes just to watch it. And that was why I think the whole college thing and the anime club thing was so huge. And I never was a part of it.
Yeah, we never did.
Because it's like everybody has these stories about in the 90s getting subtitled VHS copies. I never experienced any of that. It was my only venue was my friend. And then right at the edge there when I graduated high school – That was the boom of the torrent market. And that's when I was watching a crap ton of stuff in like 2000, 1999, 2000-ish. I was just downloading, tons of shows like, Inuyasha. I was keeping up on that. that was my venue. And of course, now I had a big, huge binder full of all the shows I had burnt, and fortunately got rid of all those.
We had kind of a, because at the time there wasn't a hard line internet. So I had kind of, I had the dial up version of Torrents, which was effectively the kind of this weird hub thing where you would connect to a hub and then you could go on people's shared out folders and you could download stuff from them. That's how I ended up getting a lot of my anime before torrents were a thing. But when I was in the barracks, we had this kind of weird system of you could borrow. There was a couple of people.
Hard drives?
No. This was DVDs were starting to catch flame then. And the downloading on a 56K modem was just not even viable. So we had the DVDs, and so certain people, you knew which friends had the different anime, and that's, and the funny thing was is that you were really protective of yours, and then you accidentally forgot which ones you borrowed from.
Oh gosh, you get post-it notes to put on people's stuff. Yeah, that's. That'd be a terrifying time, especially if you're borrowing a lot of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I don't remember how much I bought back then. I think, like I said, I think most of it was pirating. I was pretty heavy pirating in those early days. But again, that was, for a lot of shows, that was the only way you can get it because, yeah, early, late 90s, there was a lot of shows that were coming over and they were dubbing them and they were selling them for 2 episodes per VHS. But it wasn't until, like, that big boom of the internet that we had access to the stuff that was actually, people were able to, it was both the shows that people were hunting down and realizing were actually better offerings, because you didn't have a choice what you got over here for actual physical legit releases. And we finally got connected to the world, and now the world's telling us, oh, you need to watch this, this, and this, and this, and you're like, okay, torrent, and you're like, holy crap, these are really amazing shows. These are the ones I wanted to watch. This is the Neon Genesis Evangelion. This is the Akira that I loved when I first started it. It wasn't just, I think I enjoyed all the ones that I actually watched, but they weren't all knockouts, of course, back then. Not everything was amazing.
Just to be clear, this is after the anime, quote-unquote, anime bubble blew up, because I was on the high of the anime bubble, if you want to call it that, and it blew up shortly after I got out of the army, so that's when Andrew started doing all the torrents and stuff like that. So I had already kind of, and I don't want to say fell off, I just stopped pursuing it as much as I was in the army because funds drew up, dried up after you leave a certain occupation, you stop having that kind of money. And I had other issues that I had to take care of. And so throwaway money for anime just wasn't even a thing for me. And that's when you started getting into all this, what he was just describing a minute ago.
And yeah, I did the torrenting for a while, and then, like I said, moved down here, and then got into World of Warcraft. Stuck in World of Warcraft for a long time, and then, yeah, it was pretty much you and me doing the anime and the game stuff side by side, and then eventually starting up Talking Spirit, and that's kind of where we're at now. And now we have pretty much everything available in streaming and everything, and in complete series available to buy on Blu-ray for literally $10 sometimes. And so it's a scary time for people that collect things. But at the same time, the availability is pretty amazing. And plus dubbing of a lot of stuff is amazing for a lot of new viewers. So now that we finally got done with the first section of many sections.
So, going back to the original idea of this, the original premise to the Anime 101 is, if I was to come into anime mainstream right now, what would it be like? I mean, when I joined the anime fandom, it was super niche. I mean, like I said, if you knew anybody, yeah, sure, somebody may have watched Ghost in the Shell, but that even by itself was rare, and most people wouldn't even know that that Ghost in the Shell was an anime. So that's how much of a difference it is from then to now.
Yeah, that was the thing, because like when I was in junior high, it was only Joey. when I went to high school with the same person. He was literally the only person I knew that actually watched shows. There was a friend of a friend that was in that he kind of dragged into it as well. And then the other high school that I went to, because we had moved when I was in the middle of high school, in that high school, there was only a group of like three guys that were into anime. Of an entire school,
yeah.
I found like the two people in this school and the three people in this school. It wasn't a huge thing back in those days.
And so, I mean, the difference is stark. I mean, if I was to walk in not knowing anything about anime, my the way I'm playing it out in my head, I would walk in and I'd be completely and totally overwhelmed by the market because it's just so huge. It's night and day comparatively. I mean, when you go into anime, you find out that there's light and cutesy and there's dark and twisted. When it all comes down to it, tentacle porn. but when it all comes down to it, what is anime? I mean, why are there so many crazy people when you're talking about Fate Stay Night, or
what are these type people and why are they yelling at me? I just want to know why Saber did this.
What is a JoJo?
Why is everything a reference to these JoJo people?
What in the heck is a straw pirate? So I mean,
why is Crossing so weird? Why don't they have these things on their chest?
So,
but it's funny because in contrast, it's like, yeah, technically a new person to anime, you know, you say somebody says, yeah, you watched anime, you need to watch anime, dude, check out this, here's a, I don't know, a Crunchyroll sub, or go to Hulu and check the genre for anime, and they're like, okay, and they go and they click on the anime section, and there's just a boatload list, or they, I don't know if, I don't think Funimation. There's got to be a way in Netflix that you can probably find anime. I don't know how because it's a crappy way of finding just anime. But in comparison, what do we have back in the day? It was literally you went to the store and you turn one corner and you look down to the very bottom shelf and there was like there was part 9 of this show and it was part 2 of this show. And
I'm sure it's a great show, but I don't know. I'm not going to jump in the middle of it.
And there's 5 part 3s of Tenchi Muyo and then there's a part 10 of Tenchi Muyo. That was your selection.
And then a huge section of Dragon Ball Z.
Again, this is our experience. That was my experience was my friend goes, hey, I got that copy or I imported this one. Let's check it out. Or it was going to the store and seeing literally a sporadic parts of a show, which is funny because like these days, yeah, I have part 2 of Darling in the Franxx and I need to buy part 1 because I got it as a gift. But back in those days, it was like, how do you find part 3?
Yeah.
Like I was thinking of buying Haringu, which they had like a clearance of the box thing of it on Right Stuff, but it didn't have like any of the parts in it, so I'd have to find each individual parts for it.
Oh,
I looked on eBay.
I was almost going to despise you for a minute.
It was, well, they used to do that back in the day. They used to sell you, here's part 1 in a box set. That was the chipboard box. You bought part 1. That's what I did with, was it Air or Canon? I think it was Air. It might have been Canon. Air or Canon, one of the two, I bought the part 1 inside of a chipboard box wrapped. And then you had to buy the individual parts after that. That's how they did box sets back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the experience where it's like, yeah, so what's the difference here? And again, there was people that had a much better experience than I did. There was people that had the crazy college clubs where they were doing, you know, swapping bootlegs left and right. And there was tons of shows to watch because this person had all the good copies of the subtitled and they would copy it for everybody. Me, it was literally what was on the shelf until, again, Torning. That was, okay, now I can access everything. I don't have just what's on here thing.
Yeah.
So nothing versus everything.
Yeah, it is. I mean, even our experience, I mean, we've heard people that have had the experiences of the anime clubs, and it's like, you had it nice.
That sounds amazing. That sounds amazing.
And the way they describe it is like, this was the worst, the darkness of the anime time. No, that was nice compared to what we went through, okay?
Oh, poor you. You had to give somebody a bunch of VHSs and they made you copies. Boo-hoo. I either had to buy part two and enjoy just part two, two episodes of 12 episodes that was in the middle of it.
I wasn't in your network night like you were.
Versus you who had it all. And then I had to wait until I could actually torrent it, and then I had to wait 15 days to get it.
Yeah, we're still working on catching up with the old stuff, just so you know, because you didn't want to let us in on your club.
Yeah, and the melon stuff they were talking about, I'm like, where was this?
Where was all this?
Why didn't anybody tell me you can mail these VHSs to somebody and he would copy it for you for free? Who is this guy? Who is this wizard?
Shoot, I thought I had found gold when I found the Shonen Jump big old bindings, and then they cut it off. What the heck? Otaku Magazine, or the Otaku USA, or something like that. It was a magazine that they had for the longest time. Find it. Oh, this is cool. No, they cut it off. What the heck? And yes, I know that was a few years
ago. They cut you off.
They cut me off.
They cut you off.
Yeah, just as I'm finding it.
But no, I do agree with the idea that...
Because I'm in backwards town.
What was cool, and again, this is technically more connections than anything. Like, my friend having the shows that I fell in love with, and he technically was the one that was filtering for me. So him going, here, watch Akira, and we're like, holy crap, this is amazing. And he's like, let's watch, you know, Ghost in the Shell. That's amazing. Here, Tenchi Muyo. And I might be getting some of these mixed up in time frame, but I knew it was Tenchi Muyo, and I knew Akira was some of them. I'm watching them and going, holy crap, this stuff is blowing me away. So I kind of had it, I don't know, for lack of a better term, spoon-fed to me, the proper ones and filtered to me, versus technically, yeah, I can see what if I walked into his room and he had just a wall full of, you know, 5,000 anime, and I'm trying to browse through it to figure out which one I need to watch, and he's not there to go, watch this one. I can imagine somebody going onto Hulu or Netflix or Crunchyroll even, and going, where? Where? What do I do? And then they go onto a message board and say, what do I watch? And then like 50 people reply with a list of 100 shows. How do you sparse through them? And then, of course, a lot of them are, you know, suggesting the same thing that might not be a good for a starter, which we'll get into later, but...
Mm-hmm. So, continuing on, we've already mentioned the term otaku a few times, so I want to go ahead and get through a couple of terms that I think are kind of important to know, not necessarily because they're going to make or break your enjoyment of the fandom. It's just that these are terms that tend to get used a lot as you're becoming climatized to our fandom. One is the otaku. Otaku are generally, if you were to go into Japan and you were to say, hey, I'm an otaku, everybody would go smile and kind of nod. But
and then the lady walks by with the kid and goes, don't look.
Don't look. they are a thing. And us as a Western fandom, we've kind of grabbed on, clombed onto this term, and we use it for something for us. But otaku are generally kind of considered a pariah. They're
and technically to clarify it first is otakus are technically this somebody that is pretty much it's like a hobbyist of a different thing. Like in a Western term, is basically a hobbyist. Over in Japan, there are gun otakus, there are train otakus, there are there's anime otakus. Over here, we refer to the term as just strictly anime otakus, which is kind of funny because it's like otaku took on a completely different term over here than it does over there.
Right.
Because we just gravitated to that particular otaku. That was a thing over there that Westerners attached to was the anime fans, which was the otaku. And so we think anime is an otaku. A person that watches anime is an otaku. Over there, it's... oh, they're an otaku of this. They're an otaku of this. They're an otaku of this. So right. It's important to kind of... And that's you'll find that it's a lot of these terms that we're going to go through is a lot of them do have that issue where the meaning of it over there is completely different than over here. Sometimes the meaning of what they made a word for it's hard to really quantify what that means in the Western. So some of the stuff can vary. And of course, a lot of things do change over time.
Yeah. When it comes down to it, what I was trying to say was, in Japan, it's considered a separating factor, and they're very, very sensitive to cultural norms and how much those are maintained. So by calling
because
yourself,
they see it as an isolating thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Game otaku is somebody who's probably not going to go out for social events and not going to have a good work ethic. That's what they view it as.
Yeah, and that's the main thing. Whereas we tend to look at it more along the lines of something like a badge of honor. We look at it as, yes, we want to separate ourselves from the norm because we love being somebody who shatters the norm. So mm-hmm. That's why we gravitate to a label of some sort. And then at the same time, we also love the idea that it brings us together with something that we love. So when we call ourselves otakus, yes, we're separating ourselves from the culture as a whole, and yet at the same time, we're finding our own niche culture in between, and that's who we gravitate towards is other people who consider themselves otaku.
Which is funny, because back in the day, the nerd was essentially the otaku in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
The society as a whole in the West viewed nerds as being, you know, the outsiders, don't look at them, don't socialize with them. And that was really a thing back then, is that, yeah, being an otaku, technically, in the 90s, is not something I ever really wanted to come out and say that I enjoyed anime or anything, because it was such an out-of-the-norm thing, just like nerds were for computers, was cool. A very out-of-the-norm thing. So now I think it was really the internet that made it a thing. The internet empowered people to socialize and know they aren't alone. And that's why even the nerd culture is completely non-existent. Everybody thinks themselves as a nerd now because everybody has a smartphone and a computer.
There is one other term that kind of goes in with this. I guess we could probably talk about Fujoshi as well, but there is another term that is called a weeb. Is it weeb?
W-E-E-B, yeah.
Yeah. And that
I don't know which one you're talking to. You're like, is it weeb? And I'm like, I don't know what definition you're looking for.
I was trying to remember.
Depends on what the definition is, Chris.
Weebs are kind of like, I associate them with Naruto and shonens. They're the ones who are, huh?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's strictly that. It's really
I just think
Japan is gold and Japanese culture is
exactly.
Gods,
they're the one.
They're perfect, and we need to be more like them. And I want to eat my noodles with a katatsu. With a, you know,
yeah, the reason why I associate him with Naruto is because I remember the people that are running with their arms in the back behind them because they're
I think that's the juvenile description of it, but I think that's more of the this is one of those things where it's a slang technically, so it's used for multiple uses. That's just like the B word in the West. It's used multiple reasons.
It's derogatory. It's considered derogatory. I do know that right. Some people that are trying to make it a thing.
Yeah, you do. You have the person that's over here going, "Holy crap, Japan's amazing, and we need to be more like them." And then somebody calls them weeb. Then you have the guy over here like, "Well, look at this video of me running like Naruto," and he's running like Naruto with a thing on, and somebody calls him a weeb. It's just anybody that it's a derogatory term to somebody that is too into something that they personify or I guess deify the Japanese culture, I guess is the best way I would put it.
Yeah, I think that's a better way of putting it. I like I said, I just associated it with the and I like I said, I don't say Naruto people are weebs. I'm saying that
even though you're the first thing that came to
what,
his mind,
that is just what came to my mind.
Because
I
remember,
I think of the people who are doing the finger thing and trying to. I know it's not that it, like Andrew was saying, it's just the people who are just so they're beyond otaku. They're like Andrew was saying that where they make everything Japan the greatest thing ever, and they'll mass import the entire thing. They'll make their rooms into
the Tommy mats.
Yes,
gotta get those Tommy mats.
Anyway, So those two terms, did you want to, do you think going into Fujoshi is important or no? Because that's pretty, I mean, I don't think that you're going to go much farther than weebs and otaku as just getting into it. But Fujoshi is
you
something
do,
that is
you do
mentioned
need,
here.
If you're getting into anime, you do need to know that sometimes, say you do go to a comic store and you do find that corner that has the manga, you do need to be aware that there are certain people that may be lurking in the corner. And they typically do have their phone. Some of them are foaming at the mouth. Most are just drooling at the mouth.
Don't talk so yeah. bad about them. They're not that bad.
they breathe heavy, and they sometimes have glasses.
Okay. Fujoshi are people who like a certain type of,
and they talk about top and bottom too much.
Hey, I like some Fujoshi. They're cool people. So let Andrew be mean to them. I'm not being mean to them.
In all seriousness, I love Fujoshis. I just don't like them in anime.
Okay. Well, but that's the thing.
That's fair enough. I don't like a lot of archetypes depicted in anime.
This is true. I don't like the otaku in anime.
I don't like how otaku are actually portrayed in anime, which is completely mind-boggling because they're essentially making fun of the people that watch them. Anyways.
But yeah, Fujoshi is just a type that, and we'll go into the type that they're going to, that they really like, but they do like a certain, brand of anime, and, they're very, very fanatical about that. And that's why Andrew was mentioning the top bottom thing. They do really, really love that. And they do like to do what they call shipping. So I'll leave that there, and we'll talk about them a little bit more when we get into that particular section in our continued anime turns.
Okay, Fudanshis next.
Huh?
You're going to talk about Fudanshis? You talked about
If you ever bump into a Fudanshi, then you can come and find me. I will redo this entire anime podcast one more time.
Give them a hug. I don't know.
Give them a hug. They probably need it.
Well, no, they probably don't have a grouping because I've never seen one. I just seen it in an anime.
So that all being done, those are just basically the fandom as a whole. Now we're going to get into some actual basic anime terms just to get you going as far as these things are concerned. First off, we have anime. Anime is effectively a shortened word for animation. It is kind of coined off of the term from Japanese animators. They call what they create anime.
They shorten. Japan shortens a lot of things.
Yes,
like Persicon is a personal computer. Anime is no different. They don't want to say animation, so they say anime.
It's generally there is a lot of controversy over this, but it, as far as we are concerned, and I'll get into the other for other people, but generally what we consider anime is created by Japan, published in Japan. That is what we consider anime. And I do know that this is contentious. That is my next point. Contention is generally found in the art style and the origin.
And this is an ongoing struggle for us. I mean, even when we were talking about should we, because it's happening more lately than ever. I mean, you had Crunchyroll here recently announced like all these shows they're co-proing for, which is perfectly fine because they're paying money into the stuff. It's still being made in Japan. But then you realize that everything in the list that they had was from Korean comics. So is it still anime at that point? I mean, there's a lot of Korean comics stories that are coming over in Japan. They're creating anime based off of them. There's just a lot of money being dumped in Japan to make animation for, and a lot of those stories are being pulled from other countries. I mean, you had the, I forget what it was called, it was based off a European comic. They were making an entire shonen anime series based on a European comic. It was crazy.
Which one?
Radiant.
Ah.
Manfra. It's a Manfra.
But yeah, the main reason this even became kind of a thing was in particular the two main ones that started this pretty much into a controversy was Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Ruby, because those two are both both pretty much American, but they are based on the style that is anime.
Well, and you had a Japanese person that made Ruby.
Yeah. Really? I thought that was all Red Rooster.
It was under Red Rooster, but it was the guy that made it was Japanese.
Or is it Rooster Teeth?
He passed away here, what, 2 years ago?
Rooster Teeth.
Yeah, Rooster Teeth.
Okay. Yeah. I said Red Rooster for whatever reason. Red Rooster. And that messed you up.
It technically is a Red Rooster.
Anyway, so those are pretty much the ones that kind of started the entire controversy, because a lot of people, they want other people to enjoy what they enjoy. And that's really what it comes down to. I guess he is. Wow. Okay.
Monty Oom.
I thought, going off of his name, I would have never thought. So yeah. I would have caught it if I had thought about his last name, though. But when it comes down to it, a lot of people want other people to enjoy what they enjoy. And that is a lot of the problem, is when you get somebody who, or when you have an entire group that has, I don't want to say it's a law. It's just kind of one of those things that is a given for a fandom, is it's this kind of undertone of, we have accepted anything that is Japanese created, Japanese published, all source materials come from Japan. And then you try to bring something in that is kind of mimicking, well, that's fake, as far as most people are going to be in that fandom are going to be concerned. Yes, there's going to be the ones that are going to like it, and they're going to be a lot more open to it, and they're going to... I like Avatar. I personally like Ruby. I personally would not consider them anime. That doesn't mean they're not good shows. Yet the controversy and contention will always be there, as long as there is that kind of... It's not a... Like I said, it's not a law. It's just something that is kind of an unwritten rule. Does that make sense?
And that's the unfortunate thing. And I don't really technically... I don't go out of my way to go, hey, Castlevania is not an anime. Stop acting like it's an anime. But I do... It is one of those struggles that, I mean, even especially for what we do, is every now and then having somebody ask, well, why don't you guys talk about Ruby? Or why don't you talk about, yeah, Avatar? Why don't you talk about Castlevania? And you're hearing other, you know, groups of anime reviewers and stuff talk about Castlevania or whatever. And I'm over here going, I don't have time for
what we have. So.
And that's really what it is. I don't really – so – I guess it just gives me an excuse not to pursue it, is because our focus needs to be more on the catalog that is already huge, even though I'm sure Castlevania is fantastic and I'm sure Avatar is fantastic. It's just more of a thing of when I'm thinking of, okay, I have this. And even when we do see, like, you know, any chart lists all these anime, and technically, you know, five of them are manfras or manhwas, not technically mangas, source material, it does start begging the question of, well, how far? Even Thunderbolt Fantasy, we're considering, like, yeah, it's written by Jin Urobuchi, it's kind of directed by him, but it's Chinese puppets. Should we watch it? Jin Urobuchi was enough for me to say, yes, I will do that. And I think that's the case for a lot of these shows that are technically based off of French or Korean writers, is that... And of course, again, we don't even know how many of these animes are just being animated in China. A lot of them are. They're outsourcing a lot of the animation to China. You can technically see it quite often cases. You can notice. But it is funny to have that kind of barrier there, that you almost want that pureness, which technically is like the quickest way to show that you are a weeb, is by that you're technically wanting the purest form of an anime. It's like the I won't watch Ruby unless I get the Japanese version they recently did, where they dubbed it in Japanese and they'll have this English subtitles on it. It's wanting that purest form. I've already gone as pure enough that I want Japanese voicing with English subtitles, that I almost... And it's funny, though, because this goes back to the whole reason of why we got into anime to begin with. Is I enjoyed the creative writers in Japan. It was very different than what I see on my daily life of working and stuff. And it's fun to every evening jump into a completely different culture, completely different country, and completely different day by days that they deal with or that they're portraying or they're creating. And you can kind of feel it. Like I was talking about with Tower of God. It's like I can totally feel that manhwa humor. It's very I can't remember the other show that was based off a manhwa that we watched a couple seasons back. It was the one with the guy that was singing in the booth, and the other person was actually was performing on the stage, and he was like some kind of, I don't know, superhero or something like that. And you could feel the comedy was not Japanese. You can tell it. The way the comedy was portrayed, it didn't feel like a normal Japanese comedy. And I think that's what really hits me, is that when I'm going into it, I'm expecting an anime, and then I can sense that feeling of, that's not really Japanese humor, or that's not really the slapstick they usually do, or the way they usually tell their stories, or how they portray certain things. And I think that's what kind of is for me that tips me over when I see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can see that. Tower of God, you're saying Tower of God is a manhwa, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not. And that's the funny thing, is it does feel different in general. And
it's the humor.
I guess the
humor
could
probably. That's what keeps hitting me, is like, it's the humor. It feels like a manhwa.
And it seems like every time we have watched something that has been like that entire, there was an entire production company that randomly came out of nowhere, and all of the stuff that's been coming out, we've been kind of hit and miss at whole liners, and it's been all hit and miss. Every time we watch it, it's just never seems to have worked completely for us,
except for that amazing noodle movie.
Oh yeah,
but that was because they had Comics Wave working with them. That was the only reason we watched that, is because Comics Wave was working with them. Why don't I know how to spell whole liners? I was trying to think of what the other one was. Was it Spirit Pack?
That seems like the one that was the one that has the girl that I really, really want to like, but for some odd reason that show just was not working.
Tori no Shita. I think that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. Yep. The Outcast. Tori no Shita.
Yeah, I really, really wanted to like that one.
Oh, I couldn't do it because of the names. That's the other thing is because a lot of those manhwas are based on a lot of Chinese names, and it took me long enough to get used to Japanese names. I don't need to start getting used to Chinese names.
Well, that's the one thing. Thunderbolt Fantasy.
I had no clue who people were talking about.
I don't know. It's the guy that's got the sword. I'm like, and then the other guy has got a sword.
Call him the Phoenix. Just call him Phoenix. You don't have to call him by his real name. I could not. I can only tell who people were talking about when they actually pointed a sword at somebody and said, name. Anyway, sorry. Side tangenting bad.
So anyway, getting back to our main thing.
Purist.
I'm thinking that you've got the next section, because I don't remember putting that there. I have a section later on that's covering this particular thing. So if you want to talk about it, go ahead.
I know you kind of jumped down.
No, we're on anime versus cartoon. Well, anime versus cartoons, I guess the only real thing on that is anime is quote unquote for adults in general. There is anime for kids, but most generally, the concepts are a lot more adult in nature, a lot more deep as far as things that they're trying to consider, stuff like that.
Yeah, so. It's the thing to consider when you're looking at anime, and to understand what anime is, yeah, technically it's been a little different here recently in America, and of course we've always had The Simpsons, but there's always been the stigma in the West that if it's drawn animation, it's for kids.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, you do have, you know, Family Guy and all that kind of stuff. They're more adult comedies that they do have in the West. But in Japan, their genres and demographics are completely huge and vast. They have demographics for anime for everybody. They have anime that's geared towards women. There's anime geared towards men. There's anime geared towards boys. There's anime geared towards girls. Every age and gender, they have anime aimed to that group. Looking for, yeah, the old working man going, you know, going to his hotel. A nice adult male geared towards show. They have that. The lonely woman at home, that she has her nice Fujoshi comics to read. They have it, manga, anime, light novels, they have it for everybody. And that is the important thing to establish when you're coming to anime, is to realize that, and this is an important thing, it's to realize that, yes, anime is not just for kids, but also not every anime is for you.
Yes,
that
this is
a very
important,
very important thing
and
to establish.
This is
if
one of
you
the...
don't like things that are inappropriate humor, there's going to be a lot of anime that will have that. If you don't like hyper-violence, there's going to be a lot of anime that has that. If you just don't like cutesy, fluffy things, you think it's just cringy, there's going to be a lot of anime that has that. If you the thing is that you're going to have some of those things that you do like and that you should try, and to know that there's going to be a lot of that is the important things. Again, this is the nice thing about today versus way back then. Back then, you looked at the bottom shelf and you said, that looks like a hyper-violent show. That looks like a cutesy moe show. Guess this is not for me.
Yeah.
And you walk away. Whereas nowadays, you can go to, you know, My Anime List or something and click on genres and look for action, and you're going to have a list of hundreds of thousands of shows, and hopefully some of those are available just to stream on Netflix, Crunchyroll, all these different sites. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's important to know.
Remember the difference between what we went through as a starting an anime, we didn't have a choice. We glomped onto whatever we could get.
Whereas this is terrible,
now,
but I love it.
Whereas now you have a completely opposite problem where you're having too much and you might accidentally bump into something you don't much care for. So just be aware of what is at least in the show.
And that's the great thing, is now you do have the ability to find out that information. But I guess the pros and cons to today's availability of information for shows is that you do have plenty of places you can find out if a show is worth your time or not. People that will review it, YouTubers that will review it. You got entire websites devoted to people writing up reviews for it and putting stars to things. But at the same time, it's the age of the internet where everybody loves hating things, so it's really easy to find absolute disdain for any show out there.
Yeah.
So it's important to find, and it doesn't even have to be us, find somebody out there that connects to you and what they enjoy, so you have an avenue to find out what shows to invest your time into, because yes, we do acknowledge that not everybody has all the time in the world.
Mm-hmm. So,
but the other stigma put on here is the hentai stigma. Of course, like I said before, there's one stigma that all animation things are cartoons and it's for kids, which is completely contradictory for the same group of people that will also say that all cartoons, all anime are hentai, which I think is absolutely ridiculous to think that, yes, there is animated pornography, just like there is animated pornography in the West. I don't know why anime gets that stigma and the Western animation does not, but that's the thing. There is a genre and demographic of animated anime that is geared towards pornography. Just like, again, there is TV shows, movies, and a full length of pornography that is available in the West. They're no different. They both have their... I guess if you want to say it, they're dark side, and anime is no different. The West is no different. It's not that all anime is. Now, the important thing to establish is that just like, again, with all mediums, anime does have the things that are a gray line. There are shows that have the quote-unquote ecchi, which we'll talk about later, which is where they give you a peek. They like to be perverted about things, and that is a little bit more prevalent in anime than anything else. You're not going to, you know, if you look at any chart every, you know, season, you're not going to have a full list of the hentai in there, but you're going to have some of them in there that are the ecchi, perverted type stuff. So it is an important thing to note.
I find it amusing that you've got this more sexual content on American TV, and it's like I sit here and I think about the ecchi and how it is just absolutely berated that there is even a ecchi category, and yet these same people can sit there and watch American TV, see a lady walking across the room in full on underwear, nothing else covering her, and that's perfectly normal.
What is
the difference?
Well, I don't watch much television anymore, but I know like some of the last shows I watched, like Justified, they have full on sex scenes. I mean, it's no different, at least with like, unless you're actually watching hentai, at least with, you know, most all Japanese anime, you don't really have full on sex scenes in non hentai stuff.
Yeah, it's just like, okay,
they kind of more lean to the side of they don't touch each other, and if they do, they have to, you know, mosaic the hands grabbing. You know, if they hold hands, they have to mosaic it.
And this is something we'll get into later, so we'll just go ahead and move on to the next part, which is sources. Sources is an interesting thing. This is something that we talk about a lot, mostly because when we're talking about where an anime comes from or something like that, we tend to bring this up. Sources are kind of important to give you a baseline for where you can find more of it. This is important for most people who, because anime has this really, really, really bad rap, and we tend to mention it a lot, and that's called manga bait or something like that. So this is why the sources really kind of matter.
The source material.
In general, you have manga. Manga is shortened.
Not to derail you, but in my mentality of how this should flow, so that people that are thinking the same way I am can follow. We just talked about anime, and that's of course the animated finished good that you're actually visually watching, and that is of course animated by a studio, and that studio produces the anime. They have a director in there, they have the animators, and they make the show. Typically, these animes are based on a source material, and that source material is either selected by the studio or they have a production committee that tells them, here's what you're going to make this anime based off of. So I just want to put that out there. That's where we get to. Where did they get that material from? Where did they get that story, those characters from? So yeah. Anime sources, the source material.
All right. So first off, we have manga, which is basically a shortened shortened form of the word magazine, and it is usually written by a mangaka,
basically a comic for Westerners.
Yeah. Your next source will be your light novels. Those are basically short stories. They're usually, I think, around 100 pages. I'm not real sure on that, but that's generally what those are.
They're essentially kind of like they're not very descriptive. They're not, because they use sometimes novels as a source material, which are your standard novels that you would have in the West. But it's kind of like your Harry Potters. They make movies off of Harry Potters. They do the same thing in Japan based off novels. But light novels are, I would kind of describe them as something that's like, it's like a novel, but they're like almost like you're buying a chapter per chapter, not necessarily a full book. You're buying them by chapter. And they're very light on the descriptives. They're not like heavy descriptive on what's going on, because they're almost like, you know, very easy to consume. At least that's my experience with the actual translated version of them. Of course, with Japan, they can put a lot more of words into a smaller amount of actual characters than we would in the Western end. So that may be the reason. Maybe the translation's making it a little bit lighter, but it does seem like that's kind of the idea behind light novels.
Then your last main source is going to be visual novels. These are effectively a text-based game. What they'll have is they'll have pretty much still images. There is some that'll have kind of lightly animated, but it's not very much. And it features pretty much a branching storyline, and it's based on your user input.
And there's a lot of them that are technically linear as well.
And these are generally referred to as flags.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then the last kind of, I'm not going to say it's a main one, because this is kind of you will have it every once in a while, but it's not very often. These are your mixed media projects or your co-pros. And these, what they are is effectively several different things are branching at the same time. So you'll have a game, an anime, and a manga, or something to that
effect.
Music CDs. And they're just basically all being produced. It's one big old launch, and you'll have a whole bunch of different things all at the same time. And
a really good example of that they do a lot with is the idol stuff. A lot of the idol stuff, they basically, when they're at the board meeting, they're going, okay, we're going to create this to sell all of these things. We're going to merchandise the hell out of this thing. So let's find us five cute voice actresses that can sing pretty good. Let's find a record label that's going to make the CDs for it. Let's find a studio that's going to animate them as caricatures. Let's do an entire t-shirt line. Let's make a rhythm-based video game at the same time on mobile phones. Let's have somebody let's find a mangaka who's going to make the manga for it. Let's find sometimes even find a novelist that will do the light novels for it. They're doing all that at the same time. Like I mentioned earlier with how anime is made, all of these things that we've listed so far are essentially advertisements. And that's going to be the biggest stigma with anime. But I want to make it very clear that it's not always to its detriment. We have pretty much a good majority of the shows every season are literally advertisements for the manga. They're advertisements for the light novel. They're advertisements for the visual novel or for the video game. And they're all being created and paid for in the intent that people will go buy the source material. And like I said, that sometimes is to its detriment. If you ever listen to our review podcast, we usually kind of highlight that element. Like, we watched this show, and it feels like a solid ending. Or it feels like it's just literally opening up the door and saying, here's what this is, and see you in the novel. And so you're going to have some of those cases where it feels like you went through 12 episodes and you might feel like you're missing out unless you hope that is. And it's more so the case these days that they are technically coming over here. They are getting the mangas and everything over here. But it used to be back in the day, you never seen that stuff. And so that was a huge detriment to a lot of these shows. So some cases you might not even care at the 12th episode that there's more. There might be cases where you're like, man, is the manga out there? Oh, the manga is out there. So it is kind of one of those things that you do have to keep in mind when you get into anime.
Yeah, and when I was thinking of Copro, almost immediately one of the things that came to mind is they will overhype characters usually because they want to sell the figures more than anything. And we may end up going into that at some point later, but they make a lot of money off of getting you to go to the other sources, not just the anime. Mm-hmm. The final source will be, it's technically not a source. That's why I was a little bit leery about calling it a source, but it's a anime original. And which basically all that means is there's no previous work. The usually it'll be the director or the scriptwriter will come up with a idea, and they will just make an entire anime based on whatever their idea is.
And it is important to note that anime originals sometimes kind of dips itself into the thought process of a multimedia project, just because in a lot of those cases, when they do anime originals, they will do a manga on the side along with it or something like that. But the idea is that the intent of an anime original from its get-go is to create a new franchise. And it's a lot of these studios that are trying to create their own projects because, like I mentioned earlier, most studios are creating what a production committee wants them to create, and the production committee makes the calls. and often they have commercials within that commercial, essentially. Whereas with anime originals, it's typically that studio is trying to make its own property and make the full sales on anything that comes from that property. So, and that's where the, usually a lot of the excitement comes from, is because a lot of cases with the anime originals, you don't have a source material they're sticking to, and so most times they land the ending. They want to conclude the story because they knew it was going to end with 12 episodes. So it's always something I go after, and it's something that people could look into, is what are finding those originals, because they often do tell very unique stories that don't rely on you getting the full 15 volume story out of it that you're never going to see animated.
All right, do you want to do this section since you...
Yeah, you kind of got to the end there, and I figured a good thing to kind of branch into here before you got into this other crazy stuff is method of consumption for new people. So if you're new to anime, you might not know where to find everything. I know I've kind of mentioned several of this stuff earlier, but ways to get your anime. And that, and not just anime, but also other stuff. Of course, if you're looking strictly for anime, which is the animated versions of these stories, you're going to be either looking for a physical release of it, or you're going to be looking to stream it online. Your streaming sources, of course, is Crunchyroll.com. That is probably the leading one, so to speak. It was the first one to really go, okay, everybody's pirating stuff. They were technically a pirating source as well early on, but they went legit. And now they provide, they're one of the leading providers of anime, new and old. They have a huge, vast catalog, but that's a good source right there. They're also a company that is investing into a lot of production of anime. Like right now, if you're listening to this at the time that we record it, they're doing Tower of God, which is one of their properties. They have a lineup of, I think, like 12 shows they're currently doing. Funimation is another one. They are a part of Aniplex and a part of Aniplex USA and Aniplex. They currently are pretty much the secondary, or the, I guess they're right now technically stretching their neck past Crunchyroll. I would say that Crunchyroll has a better back catalog, whereas Funimation is growing in their newer catalog. Funimation is better known for having dubs, though. They were a dub company originally. And they are growing as a streaming company that does simuldubs as well. So if you don't like listening to Japanese people talk and you like to hear the English dubs that they do, Funimation is a great option for that. High Dive, they are a part of Sentai Filmworks, even though they wouldn't admit it to you. Sentai Filmworks is another kind of... Sentai Filmworks does a lot of licensing of home video releases. Sometimes they will get new shows to stream, and they will typically give them to either their High Dive platform, which is very minimal, or they will often give those licenses to be streamed on Crunchyroll, Funimation, and Hulu. Netflix, of course, they are the bane of our existence recently, but they do dump a lot of money into Japan as well. They fund a lot of original anime to be produced there. We made jokes a lot about them showing up at studios with a big, huge suitcase and say, make an anime for us. Netflix Japan does have a huge branch in Japan. So typically in a season, you will often see them grabbing one to two shows, but they are dumping a lot of full length shows at certain points, typically in the springtime of every year. So they are a good source of a lot of shows, and they're getting a lot of other shows here and there. They got, of course, Neon Genesis Evangelion. That was a one that was kind of non-existent on any streaming platform for the longest time. They grabbed that. So it's a good source. And the last one is Amazon Prime. They were a good source for a while there. They still technically have a lot of shows from different companies that they have paid to view. Their Amazon Prime service itself allows you to stream some shows without having to pay additional. They were doing for a while there, grabbing one or two titles here and there each season, but that's kind of been non-existent lately. So, yeah.
They got slapped a little too hard.
Yeah, they weren't doing too well. So, there you go. And then if you don't like to stream and you like to have physical collections, which is kind of like me, I like to have my physical collections, even though I do stream a lot. There are some options. Right Stuff Anime, of course, is the best place to go to if you're looking for good deals for anime. They have a lot of really good sales there, especially during the holiday times. So if you like to build your collection of Blu-rays and DVDs,
you're not kissing up to Sean Kleckner right now.
Are you? Dark Lord Kleckner, you have to do what Dark Lord Kleckner does. Although I missed the penguin. But yes, Sentai Filmworks is another great source. Of course, I mentioned earlier, High Dive, Sentai Filmworks, they are a licensing company, so they have a lot of shows that you can get from them. Funimation, of course, they have their own shop, even though it's absolutely terrible to go through. But that's, that's that. That's that. But yeah, Funimation.com, they have some shows that you could, they're basically their licensed shows. They sell them on their store, and you can, again, holidays, you get a lot of good sales there. Sentai Filmworks also does a lot of good holiday sales. The last and the, I would say the last resort that I would tell somebody to go to is Amazon. Amazon does have a lot of these stuff, a lot of these titles from these different companies, unless it's a quote unquote Right Stuff exclusive. A lot of the Aniplex stuff is Right Stuff exclusive. Amazon does sell all this stuff, but I don't prefer them just because a lot of the stuff I get from them is damaged. So I will say that Right Stuff and technically bootleg, Sentai.
I would assume a lot of bootleg stuff goes across there too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely rampant on eBay. That's why we're not even mentioning that.
I just think from a perspective of somebody that collects, one of the more important things for me is that my collection arrives undamaged. I hate having any kind of damage on it whatsoever. And Right Stuff prides itself in delivering things in good condition. They box them crazily well. It is important to note that if you buy stuff from Sentai Filmworks, it most likely will come from Right Stuff. And there's even a lot of stuff from Funimation that will end up coming from Right Stuff. They're just a really good distribution company, and a lot of these companies use them to distribute their goods. So, yeah. And, of course, the other side of things is, of course, the mangas and the light novels. If you do get light novels and mangas, again, another good. It's the same sources with as before with Right Stuff. That's pretty much the best option. You can do Amazon as well, but again, expect it to come damaged. You can't get those from Sentai Filmworks or Funimation, so let me correct there. And of course, there are digital options for light novels and manga, which I would point to Chris because I only have Kindle and I buy digital manga from Amazon and I put them on my Kindle reader. So
the main ones I know of is J Novel. And Viz has pretty much the Shonen Jump down to a T. So, yes, Andrew, like Andrew mentioned, Kindle. There is also Yen Press. I don't know if Seven Seas uses
Yen Press. Is Yen Press doing better now? Because Yen Press was not a good reader when I tried to use it.
Well, one of the nice things is that J Novel has pretty much grabbed most of their stuff, so you can kind of bypass a lot of that problem. But no, as far as I can tell, their app absolutely is horrid. The other one that I have is Bookwalker. And then the Crunchyroll manga app seems to still be a thing. So take that for what it is.
Humble Bundle also does a lot of manga and stuff on there. So keep an eye on Humble Bundle. Sometimes I got a ton of manga from them. It's a little more difficult to get into a iPad or something like that. I had to go through I had to get an actual manga reader that I imported all my manga into, because if you buy it from Humble Bundle, you're just literally buying the PDFs. So, yeah, keep that in mind. But it's a good source to get a lot of really cheap stuff. And of course, you're putting money to a good cause, of course. So,
if I remember right, I had the Nook, and getting manga into that was absolutely horrid. Yeah. But from what I understand, it's a lot better now, but I don't know how it works because I haven't gotten the newer Nooks. So,
which sucks because I technically like that whole e-ink thing. Cause like the other day we were at the campground and I'm reading something on my iPad, and iPad has great contrast and it does a lot better of, you know, offsetting that. But
e-ink is a lot better.
If you're right under
eyes.
Some light, it's going to suck. Comic Flow, that was what I used to import them. So yeah, cool stuff. Sorry, you may have your outline back.
All right, so let's go back into some terms. These are going to be more for the anime themselves, because you're going to, as you get going, these a lot of these terms won't really matter to you when you're watching the show, what will end up happening is as you get more into the fandom, you will hear references to these words. And they're kind of words that are just thrown around as just normal words for the fandom. They're words that we use a lot.
There's some of them that they won't necessarily translate just because they expect that the fandom's going to know. But there's also times where they oddly translate them. And I think it's important to know what the actual term means, because sometimes they take liberties on some of these. Like, we'll talk about in a little bit, the lolicon. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll translate it as pedophile. And it's not always a pedophile. So I think it's important to know, like, if you're watching a show in Japanese with subtitles, you'll learn these things over time, so don't feel overwhelmed. I think it's important that after a while that you watch these shows, you will start to actually learn some of this terminology and some of the, you won't necessarily be able to speak it, but you will recognize it, I would say. And then you'll be able to go, that's not really what they said. And it's great, not necessarily that not to say that you should be that person that goes immediately to the site and go to the comment section and say, that's not what that meant. It's more so that we've had several times where they say something and you go, I know what they actually said. That translation kind of changed the meaning there, but I know what they said. And it enhances the viewing experience, I think, in the end.
All right. So what we've got is the first ones we're going to do is going into the kawaii and moe. These are the cutesy things. So
not first to off, be mistaken with kawaii.
Yeah. It's
kawaii.
kawaii is, of course, cute. This is one of your kind of bread and butter. If you go into the moe side of things, you're going to hear about everything cute, because that is what drives a lot of the people who love the cute shows. So kawaii is cute. Next is moe. Now, this I remember going, I just recently, like Andrew said, he went back, and I also had went back a couple weeks ago to listen to our old show, and it was funny to remember that we actually had some kind of a weird thing about
a
moe.
Disagreement. I don't know.
I don't know where we had this disagreement with moe, but apparently we had a disagreement with moe. I barely remember it, but we did. Moe, and Andrew did explain it really well, and I do really like the way he explained it. Because moe gets referred to as cute a lot, and it's not really cute. I said it was probably more closer to sexual, but it's not. It is a blossoming or a budding. It's something that becomes more cute or more attractive to a person.
Yeah, the way it was kind of put is that it's kind of like a booming, like an exciting thing. It's something that it just is budding out there. And I think the big example that you really do see a lot in anime, what you'll see it used a lot in anime, is like it's the trope situation where normal girl puts on glasses, maybe dresses herself up a little more, and she's normally more childish. But she dresses herself up a little more, and she puts on glasses, and she comes in the room, and suddenly the girl says, "Moe," because she's blossoming. She looks more mature. She's got like she's budding, so to speak. It's like a flower budding, and that was always the kind of thing that I usually see in it, is that blossoming, that budding, that thing that excites somebody when they see them. And it is something that has been recently apparently referred to more towards objects and things. But it's normally, in the, you know, purest sense, a budding of a character that is blossoming, so to speak. So,
all right. Now, the next section we have is little girls. So, first off, we have...
Yes, Chris, little girls, not 15-year-olds that you seem to call everything lollies, unless it's a 25-year-old, which then they might as well be dead because they're old. That's the Japanese joke.
They're useless.
That's the Japanese joke. Is it's like you reach 25, you're literally retiring.
So first off, we have Onanako, which is the actual translation of little girl. Then you have kind of a form of the term. I don't know what the best way to explain this, but it's the term is called Loli. And Loli is short for Lolita. And this is actually from a 1955 novel written by Russian-American novelist Vladimir Nabokov. And he is... He basically wrote a story about a little girl that was coming on to a guy. If you want to know about it, fine, go find out for yourself. It's not that great of a novel, honestly.
I should put that on the back of the thing. If you want to look at it, go ahead. Not that great of a novel.
I had to find out what the heck was all of this about. I had to understand this. At any rate, it's done. It's over. That's Loli.
<Come on. laughs>
And the final term that you're going to hear
it's like the same. It's like the same response I get for Bunny Drop. It's like I watched the anime and said, I want to check out the manga. It's done. It's over with. Move on.
It's over. Move on.
Didn't exist.
And the last one you're going to hear a lot is Imoto. And Imoto is basically little sister. And it is a lot of them. You're going to, those are the ones that are little girls that are looking up at you and they're saying Oni-chan, because Oni-chan is big brother, or One-chan if you're a big sister. That's basically the three pretty much categories of little girls. So the next one will be little boys. This is Otokonoko is the actual translation for little boy. And then you have the kind of boy version of Lolita, which is Shotaro or Shota. This is actually from an old anime called Iron Man number 28, or Gigantor would be the Western version of that. And Shotaro is the main character in that show, and he's kind of a headstrong, kind of a Opie Taylor type character. He's just he's a good boy that just kind of is the hero, and he does a lot of things with his big old robot. And
do they say paw a lot?
Paw. No. But he would be the kind of the male version of the Lolita, because a lot of people eventually, a lot of girl ladies just kind of fell in love with that clean boy that does all the right things. And so that's where the Shotokan came from. So then we have the cute genres, which this is where you're going to end up bumping into a lot of these kind of terms.
Why didn't you bring up like G-chan and stuff? Why is it just the little boy and little girl?
Because nobody really talks about G-chan very often. So in the cute genres, we have basically your cute girls doing cute things. This is going to be your K-ons, your Mitsuboshi Colors, your
Strawberry Marshmallow,
your
Heihachi When They Cry.
No. please don't go looking for cute things there.
Nanan Biori.
Yeah. Is the Order a Rabbit? A lot of shows
Panzer
like
that. Dragon. Panzer. Girls on Panzer.
Yes. Okay. I think I was like,
anymore? Wait,
Panzer Dragon. Where are you at?
Panza. Panza 4. Abyss.
Please don't go to the Maiden Abyss looking for cute girls.
There's a cute girl in there.
There is a cute girl in there, but please don't go to that show looking for cute girls doing cute things. So the next category I've got is Senpai and Kohai. So this is another section that you're going to bump into a lot. You'll usually see a picture with a cute girl saying, "Senpai, notice me," or something to that effect. And this is usually in the category of schools and stuff like that. So the term for school, or the Japanese word for school, is gakuen. This is something that you're going to hear referenced here and there. It's not very often, but usually when they're going to school, they will mention gakuen. Senpai is effectively somebody who is senior to you. So if you are a freshmen, you're basically your sophomore and up, they are senpais. If you just came into a new job, the people who are above you are your senpai, the people who have been working longer. So this is in reference to school, occupations, or experience. So in a job, somebody could be a senpai or a kohai. So it's not just school. Kohai is effectively the opposite. They are somebody who's junior to you. So if you are a senior, anybody who's junior and below, they are your kohais. Same thing with your occupation. If you have been working at a job for 3 years and somebody just comes in, they are your kohai. Do you want to jump in? Sensei, this is your teachers. These are also in reference to artists, so please don't get stuck on only teachers. So if you have somebody who is in martial arts, they will be a sensei. They are a teacher of some sort. A writer, somebody who is writing a novel or a mangaka or just a artist in general, somebody who's drawing art or painting, those are all senseis. That is something that they are giving to the world. That is where kind of is they're giving to somebody else knowledge or something. That's where the term sensei comes from. Shisho is kind of similar to sensei, but it is a master of an art form. Similar to the sensei, master.
Art forms besides manga. The joke.
Okay. So basically your school life genres are going to generally go around the genres of romance, your club shows, your dramas, your harems. They all generally have school life involved in a lot of those types of shows. School life in itself is a little bit more difficult than the cute girls doing cute things. So because of the fact that it tends to be a genre that blends with other things.
Yeah, I guess right here it's kind of important to note that all anime typically does have waves of popularity in its storytelling. Similar to, you know, Western media, you do have there was the Star Wars boom, and suddenly we had a crap ton of sci-fi stuff and space travel shows. And then suddenly out of nowhere, everybody got bored of space travel shows, and then we suddenly got into superhero stuff here recently. And now we're kind of in the stage where we're starting to get bored of superhero stuff, and we'll move on to something else. Similar things happen in Japan with anime and storytelling. Their mangas and light novels, they have waves. And one of the biggest waves in the recent history was mecha. We had tons of mecha stuff coming out, and people got sick of seeing mecha shows. Then we got this period of time where there was nothing but... There was a fantasy phase, there was a mecha phase, then there was a school phase, and then now we're in the sekai phase. So you will often see, if you're looking into back catalogs or you're looking into seasonal stuff to kind of look at what has been, maybe you want to dip into certain year periods of shows to find which are the best shows, you'll often see this. You'll often see there's an increase of certain genres. And one of those was school stuff. And it still is a prevalent thing. And we talked a little bit about this in several of our podcasts, but typically... you'll often see more stories told in anime that take place in that school period of life, that up to, you know, college lifespan, because in Japan, this is kind of the phase of time where, you know, their children have, you know, some level of freedom. They're still learning. They're still blossoming. They're still growing. They're still learning things. You don't often see stories being told about adult life and stuff with anime. Less so anyways, because that's typically the time which they get a job and they're part of the cog in the system, that they have to go to work, you know, day and night and then go home and sleep. So it's a little less interesting than your stories about kids, you know, having fun and learning things and, finding their own place. So yeah.
Yep.
Which brings us to the working life genre that Chris wanted to talk about.
Work life. I felt that it kind of went hand in hand. Like I mentioned earlier, you had the senpai and kohai. So I figured we might as well talk about work life a little bit. Work life, you have your job, and you will hear this constantly. It's such a funny word because it sounds like they're saying arubaito, but it's not. It is arubaito. And that is just basically part-time job. A lot of them will mention that, and a lot of them, for whatever reason, they all work at the konbini, which is the corner store or the convenience store. I think the closest thing that we have would be something like a 7-Eleven or the gas stations.
Nothing matches the Japanese.
This is true. Store. Nothing is like theirs. They've got everything in these stores.
full course meals in there.
You're
healthy foods.
You also in a lot of these you will find the idol shows, which
I think of anything they're more idol shows than anything, but it's funny because I don't really necessarily see a lot of the idol shows as being working life just because right. They don't really talk about the work related stuff. It's just them, you know, getting themselves fit and going out on the stage. It's not really so much about how much did we sell? Did we sell enough CDs? That the neat and, you know, the meat and potatoes of an actual business. It's more just about the kids. Whereas you don't really often see shows about actual workforce. There's the comedies like Working and Servant X Service, or something as stressful as Shirobako, which was an absolute treat, and which is great for starters, by the way, because Shirobako is technically showing you how these shows are made. So it's a cool little thing.
Yes, work life is one of those that is really hard to kind of pin down because it's not a type of story that a lot of directors whatever will actually try to even bother trying to cover. It's just not an
work life is boring.
Work life is boring.
You go in there and you're doing paperwork. That's really interesting.
So again, this is something that's not going to happen very often, but that's really kind of, yes, I'm stretching a little bit to get to idols, but
there are some other cases like performing arts. Those are a lot of great shows. And I think that they work well as even though it is a working environment show, it's entertaining. Like technically Shogun Roku Rakugo Shinjo is a working life anime. It is technically his entire life. But they are performing, and that is their job. So there is some oddballs in there, mm-hmm. here and there. It's hard to do a full-on job.
Well, to go into something that actually does get covered occasionally. fantasy and historical. We haven't had a fantasy in a while, but they just morphed into isekai, I guess.
Isekai, yeah. I was going to say, you might as well put isekai on there.
So you got fantasy and historical. A couple of terms that you're going to probably hit here and there, fantasy is so many things. So just to kind of bring it into a couple of terms that you'll hear here and there, will be your shinobi, which I doubt anybody doesn't know that, but it's a ninja is really all it is. You've added in some things here. So,
I was just going to say, if you one of those shows, there's Katana Katari, Ninja Scroll, Basilisk, and if you're ready for a long journey, there's Naruto.
Then you've got your samurai, which Andrew's got Blade of the Immortals and Engelmois, which are very at least one of them. Blade of the Immortal would be the one that got
they remade it here recently.
Both of them are very solid shows.
Engelmois is not really necessarily samurai, but there is technically samurai in it. It's more the Mongolian invasion of Japan, so.
And another term for that is bushi, which you will hear that term probably used more than samurai. But it's one of those words that gets, thrown into the middle of a sentence, so you'll barely ever hear it, once you get more seasoned, you'll probably pick up on it a lot more. But yes, bushi tends to be used a lot more than samurai in a show itself. But people outside of the show will probably just refer to him as samurai. Then you've got your fantasy and historical genres in these, which will probably be like your Record of Lodoses, which is that dwarves and elves and dark elves and just everywhere. Once you get into the fantasy, the Japanese,
company.
Yeah, Japanese love, they will mollify the heck out of them elves.
How not to summon Demon Lord.
The Japanese absolutely love the fantasy genre. I wish they would just be more outward with it. There's two different genres that they love, absolutely love. And that is fantasy and then your sci-fi stuff, which is coming up next.
And that is one of those things where it is a different culture, and so they've found what sells more. And so they've grasped onto something different. With the West, we typically see fantasy as being more like deep, realistic, often dark fantasy. Whereas in Japan, they're more inclined to go, well, they dig the, you know, more cute and attractive elf. So let's go more for that direction. Let's moedify it. Let's make it more, not so much, you know, adult looking, but more youthful and beautiful, which is technically also the aspect of the Western culture. But they often see the use of that stuff a little more different over there than they do over here, which is, I find to be nice. But yeah, there's every now and then where I do want to see something more like a Record of Lodoss War, where they portrayed technically anything in the you know, the very early 90s and 80s, a lot of those old fantasy animes were trying to go for that more, you know, Lord of the Rings kind of look for their fantasy. And so that is kind of an interesting little transition that happens over time. I think recently the only kind of really more Lord of the Ring-ish type of fantasy setting that I've seen is probably Goblin Slayer. It's more brutal and more dark setting for the orcs and the goblins in that show are very brutalist, not just everybody be happy and go out on adventure that you'll normally see with anime.
So the one of the other categories that we have here is going to be your kind of more futuristic stuff. That's your robots, your mechas, and your exosuits, and your cyborgs. Those are another category that they tend to like. That would be kind of like Ghost in the Shell, Armitage the Third, Evangelion, stuff like that.
Gundam.
Yes, Gundam is big.
My gosh, you mentioned Gundam.
People or, will absolutely destroy
Old Noah Zero, all those kind of thing. Now, you kind of skip past the historical, but it is important to know that with anime, they have a huge broad spectrum of historical. You can go something as near as something like the Showa period and stuff like that. You do have, like, again, Showa Genroku. You have a lot of World War II-based historical stuff. And that's usually the ones that I actually really enjoy. I like those old period piece-type historical animes that give you a little bit of an interesting look. And yes, a lot of them are kind of fictional. You have just a more weird show that's just set in a certain time period. But they do kind of capture that sense of that time period with the story they're telling, something like Sirius the Jaeger, or something like here recently with the racing show Apare Ranma. So it's something to keep in mind.
Psychological thriller is kind of one of
the banes of Chris's existence recently.
Recently, yes.
Even though I like to point out that you were pretty open about talking about Higurashi they cry every 2 seconds in our 32nd episode.
Yes, there was a time that I was very much into psychological thrillers.
Especially Higurashi when they cry. I was very surprised at how many times you brought it up. I'm like, dang, Chris, really wants people to watch that. It's not a good starter show.
Yeah, psychological thriller is one of those, it's a type of anime that really does delve into the darker aspects of the psyche. And what it tends to do is it tries to have you explore that side of yourself. Whether you know that you would go down that dark road or not, it at least gives you a kind of, I don't want to say a release. What it does is it kind of gives you a something to relate to so that you can at least explore that part of you, that shadow part of yourself, not having to actually do the act of whatever it is. So in a lot of ways, some of the darker shows at least gives you some form of being able to explore that.
Yeah, the interesting thing about psychological, and this is really probably the thing that really kind of showed me, and there was a little bit of it in, like, you know, Akira, but it was really the kind of side of anime that really did kind of submit me into the anime fandom, because I've never really, until I looked into psychological horrors that they were kind of presenting in with anime, I didn't really kind of see that kind of storytelling in Western storytelling. And it was really kind of diving into the mind of somebody from another culture and what they were willing to kind of dig into. And it's sometimes unsettling, but for the most part, they're intriguing, and it's very fascinating to kind of dive into this stuff. And it's funny because it's really easy for psychological thrillers and horror shows in anime to get very either cringy or melodramatic. But there is an element of it of trying to accept what the storytelling was looking to go for and not just assume that it was going for a B-rated movie. I know that we had here recently the show that...
Village?
No, not The Lost Village. It was a show that I watched and you dropped it, and they had a video game that was based off of that you got on the Switch.
Oh, the...
It was made off of
Angels of Death?
Yeah, Angels of Death. A good example here recently was Angel of Death, and it was a show that was literally trying to get in the mind of killers, and it is really, and it was the same, I guess it was the same thing with The Lost Village. It gets really into this idea of trying to do something, and it seems like very melodramatic and over the top. I mean, Lost Village, you had the chick yelling execute every 2 seconds, but at some point you realized there was a reason why everybody was the way they were. And so in most cases, people don't give it that much of a chance to really get to that punchline, I guess. And it was the same with Angels of Death. At some point I realized these people are kind of weird because they're broken in a way, and I might need to kind of just let this story tell it the way it's telling. And at some point I realized it was pretty fascinating to kind of get into this. It's not the way I think, obviously. I'm not a murderer. But it's the way that the writer wanted to portray the way they thought. And so it's really easy for these to get kind of muddled in either melodramatic side or an over-the-top side. But the cool thing is that in most cases, they tell something really fascinating, and that was what's always drove me into them. Now, there are the ones that are outside of that realm. There's a lot of them that are just kind of just phenomenal shows that just drive home how great Japanese writers can make when they are given the option to. Death Parade, there's Perfect Blue, Satoshi Kon's stuff, which is one of them's Perfect Blue. Satoshi Kon is a genius at psychological thrillers and horrors. He is a mastermind of that stuff, and I wish that he was still around to make more stuff. But there's a lot of them out there that are just absolute phenomenal. Serial Experiments Lane. Now, you have to be really ready to get into Serial Experiments Lane before you watch Serial Experiments Lane, but that is another one that's absolutely phenomenal that everybody should check out. So it is truly one of the most unique genres for anime, because when I see them, I gravitate towards them because they always turn out to be the most fascinating storytelling out of all of these genres. Now, I guess the only thing that's pretty close to that would probably be sci-fi, because I think that the Western side has kind of given up on the space stuff. We had our space time for storytelling and movies, and Japan never really let it go, which is cool.
Who knows? Maybe we'll go back to it sooner or later.
Yeah, they just launched the SpaceX.
SpaceX, so that might actually get people excited again. So, here we go. And our kind of, I think that's our final section. I saved it for last because it is the best, of course. And that is
Shonen Epics, obviously.
Shonen Epics, no.
That was the comedies. No,
I guess I do have a section after this.
So I put comedy on
it. It's not the last section. But right now, we go into the ecchi. Now, ecchi is kind of a shortened version of hentai. And so it's the way that the Japanese pronounce the letter H. Their kana is very different than our letters. They don't actually have a letter for H. So they actually put two kana together to get something that approximates H, which is the A, E, and the chi. So you have those two letters together, and that forms ecchi.
Ecchi.
And that
we were watching Corona talk about slangs in Japan and in America, and one was bruh, and she's spelling it out. She's like, B R U ecchi. She said ecchi. She just said ecchi.
So anyway, that is the shortened for the word hentai. Now, hentai gets a weird rap, and I understand why it ended up this way, and
it's a weird rap.
It is. It's
got a weird stigma to the thing.
Well, hentai. There is two versions of, if you want to call it porn, in Japan, and for some odd reason, all porn is hentai. I don't know how this happened, why Americans did this, but this is how it happened. The best I can figure is there is a form of porn in Japan that is called ero, and that is literally erotic. And then hentai, hentai it does not mean porn. Hentai means pervert. Now, pervert is literally pervert, and I know that it sounds stupid, but even in when you think about the word pervert, you are thinking about technically two different things. It has two different definitions. One is perverted, as in lifting up skirts and looking at women's panties. And the other is twisted and something like that. When the word hentai is actually twisted and messed up, and somehow we associated it with Japanese porn, and it's not. It is twisted and messed up. That is why there is tentacle porn in hentai. But yeah, ero is going to be your more kind of vanilla-ish porn, if you want to call it that. And then hentai is your tentacle, mass rapes, and all your crazy crap over there. Again, with ecchi is going to be more along the lines of just a tease. That's really what it is, based on the idea of this is your kind of more fan servicey type shows. It's more light-hearted and playful. It's just a simple panty shot or a girl running across a fan and her skirt going up and she goes, ooh, ecchi, or something like that. That's basically ecchi.
Go watch Punchline.
Punchline.
If you want an example, go watch Punchline. It's an amazing show.
Now, I did mention earlier the fujoshis, and I said that at some point we will probably get, when we get to that section, I'll mention what that section is, and that is this. This is going to be your boy loves and fujoshi don't follow girl love, but who knows, maybe there's a section of a male version of... I don't know. Anyway. No,
they are a breed of their own.
They're a breed of their own. So, Fujoshi's Love, BL. That is basically boy love. They do go down the path, deeper and deeper down the path that goes into Yaoi and all that stuff. So I'll get into that in a little bit. But basically, your boy love and your girl love is usually why it is. I don't know.
I wonder if a girl that was heavily into Yuri, if they would still allow themselves to be called a Fujoshi.
And that's what I was saying. I don't know if there is an opposite version of that. But when it comes down to it, Fujoshi is, what is it, dirty woman or something like
right,
that?
Right, that was what I was going to get to, is I'm wondering if they would still consider themselves that if they were into, like, Yuri, because it literally just means, like, yeah, dirty girl or something like that.
Or is it old lady? Rotten girl.
Rotten girl, that's
rotten
right.
Rotten girl, there it was. And anyway, the Fudanshi, they actually added Fudanshi to the Urban Dictionary, go figure.
Just for that manga. And that one person listening that got insulted by me saying give them a hug because they don't have any, they're unknown at this point, so they're very much so a minority.
So anyway, BL is basically boy love. That is the lightest version of the basically Yaoi train as you go down. Didn't mean it that way. Let me rephrase it.
What's a Yaoi train and why does that bother you? Did I miss something?
Train, Andrew. Train. Two cars, couple together.
Okay.
Anyway. So anyway, so BL, Yaoi, it all is the same kind of list of different types of categories in this section. GL, or girl love, that goes down the path of Yuri. Yuri is actually based on a female lesbian character at some point. Her name was Yuri, and so it just became its own genre based on that. Don't ask me where the term Yaoi came from. It's the same thing as
you. Because somebody was looking at a book and somebody made a manga that had a, you know, a guy on guy action happening, and he looked up and said, "Yaoi."
Oh, I see. I think that was you.
And then they pointed. They heard me say it and they coined it.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, it's funny because I follow pretty much every genre pretty full thoroughly. Yuri and Yaoi is the only one that just never connected with me. Not that I have a problem with it, is that I just never find, for me, the Yaoi and Yuri genre of storytelling, either manga or, because I've read some manga like Citrus I was into because the artwork was gorgeous. But I've tried pretty much all the Yaoi and Yuri shows that I can possibly try. We get a lot of review copies from Right Stuff. They did the Gravitation and Junjo Romantica. And I've watched them all. I never find their storytelling to be that great just because they either get too caught up in the forced relationship until somebody submits into the relationship, or they're abusive, or they're overly melodramatic. A lot of them are very melodramatic. And so it's the one genre that I could never really find myself enjoying. But I will say Bloom Into You was a huge surprise to me. So if you're looking for a good starter Yuri show, I think Bloom Into You is fantastic. And I didn't mind Yuri on Ice, even though I think Yuri on Ice was less than what people think it was. I think it was very teasy like most Yaoi are. But it was a fantastic show with great music and some pretty phenomenal animation. So
neither of those really had what I coined and talked about for a long time was the top bottom problem. Neither of those have that as much.
Yeah.
But
not as prominent.
Yeah. Just to be clear, BL tends to go into Yaoi very quickly. So be aware of that. There is a level of difference, and for some odd reason in the Yaoi side, the BL love, the boy love side, it tends to blur a lot more. The lines get blurred a lot more easily. Girl Love and Yuri, it is almost absolutely separated. You have to specifically look for Yuri to find it. Whereas Girl Love
to make this more clear is that the transition from it just being kisses and advancements into actual sexual movement happening. And yes, with the boy and boy stuff, like Ginger Romantica and stuff, it's like you're watching the show and you're like, oh, here's another boy's, you know, love thing here. Okay, wow, they're in bed. Okay. I've yet to see, unless I go after an actual hentai that is classified, or as you said, Arrow, or something that's actually sexual show that's just nothing but that, and it's not really a story being told. You don't find that in the girl and girl stuff. They are typically, a lot of kisses, which is very rare in anime in general, but never really anything further than that. It's kiss, and then they're really confused for the next two volumes.
Yeah, pretty much.
So yeah, that's what he means, is like that border between the two, which again, you will often find people just call everything that is two girls with a relationship Yuri, and everything that is two boys in a relationship is going to be called a yaoi. I rarely ever hear anybody call them BL or GL. It's just, this is a hentai Yuri, or this is a hentai yaoi, or it's a Yuri or yaoi.
It's funny, because at one time it was called boy love and girl love. I don't think that people even bothered saying boy love, girl love anymore. It's just yaoi and Yuri. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree. So maybe next time I do re 101, I'll drop those completely.
Things have changed in the last 9 years.
Yes, this is true. But we do need to get into the kind of last little section of the ecchi area, and that is going to be the cons. Negatives. They're not negatives. They are negatives. Complexes. Because these do exist, and they are referenced here and there, so it is important to kind of mention it.
Again, we're talking about terms that are Japanese terms, where they take two words and they kind of shorten them together. Again, persicom being personal computer, con is complex.
Now, I do
want
to
put that at the end of different types of words.
I do want to be clear on this. I have this section in the ecchi because it is important for you to know the term when you are searching ecchi. I do not say that a lolicon is a pedophile, like Andrew had mentioned earlier. This does not mean pedophile. At the same time, you can, and you should not, but you can look up lolicon in the ecchi section, and you will find exactly what you are looking for, if that is what you are looking for. But be aware of what you are looking for and where you are looking for it in. Thank you. I'm just being clear on this. Anyway, lolicon is just somebody who is kind of has a soft spot for little girls. And it can delve into, I want to protect this smile type thing. And yes, it can go very far down that road. I don't really want to cover it.
Yeah, it's really one of those things that kind of rides the cliff. And, and it's often kind of seen as an adoration, an adoring of children. And the problem is that too often, and even in anime itself, they ruin it. Really good example of this. I watched Listen to Me, Girls, I'm Your Father. And I thought it was really wholesome. I thought it was very cute. It had this guy, pretty young guy, that has to take care of these three girls. And I thought it was doing very well not to touch on the whole stigma of he's doing it because he's getting around these little girls. And it's going to turn very predatory. And it wasn't. It wasn't predatory. It was very respectful of it. I felt it was a very cute show. Yeah, you do have this one girl. One of the girls is very in love with him. And But he never really, it never touched on it. He was very, it was very respectful about what was dealing with, and it felt like a family. And then they had this one guy that would show up. This one side character that would show up and completely undermine the writer's intent of it to be wholesome. And that was the character who was trying to push this narrative of Lolicon and pervert it, basically. And that's that kind of thing that even Japan themselves, they kind of joke about and they write it, and it causes this stigma to it. So there is a wholesome side to it, which is the adoring cute things. This girl is absolutely adorable and I want to protect it, like you said. But unfortunately, there's this other side of it that is perverting it. And you can't really, it's just like the whole aspect of anime is great, a great medium. But then there's this other side that perverts it. It's just something that exists. And so it makes it very difficult to even touch that term or even to search with that term, because you're going to find the perversion side of it. So it is one of those things where it's almost like a lost word. Like, don't even touch it. It's already fell off the cliff. They destroyed it. So, yeah.
The opposite of that term would be the shotokan, and
all pretty much fall in that same issue.
Yeah,
they've all become stigmas.
Shotokan would, like I said earlier, the shota being the little boy, and same thing, cute boy you want to protect type thing. Siscon. Your little sister looking up at you, Oni-chan, and you want to protect her. Rokan, same thing. Looks up at you, One-chan, you want to protect him. It's all the same thing. These are the cons, the complexes. There is the incest term, that if you care to look that up, that's in there as well.
Good transition here.
Yeah. let me complete the ecchi section with that and say, why the heck shonen is right after that, I don't know, but hey, I set it up that way.
There's also comedies.
There's comedies. We can do comedy first. Do you want to do comedy first? Let's do comedy first so that you can get all the ecchis out of the way before we go into the shonen.
Yeah, comedy is the really only thing I would like to point out with the comedy is it's probably the hardest one for you to get into. Especially if you're starting out in anime, comedies is one of the ones that has a kind of heavy barrier to entry. And that's mainly because watching a dub and they've altered the comedy into something that makes sense to a Western audience, you're going to have issues with following their humor. A lot of it's word-based humor, a lot of it's wordplay. A lot of it's based on just dialect and playing off of words that way. And there's just different games and stuff that they play themselves that, you know, unless you got the connotations or say somebody drops somebody's last name and calls them by their first name and everybody is starting to freak out about it, you're probably not going to understand it if you're fresh into anime and technically the Japanese culture and humor. So it is something that is... it's fun to learn once you start getting into it. And it's something that I had a lot of fun getting into. And there was a lot of times where I didn't understand a dang thing they were talking about. And there's still a lot of them that I don't, especially if it's based off of historical folklores and folktales that they tell their children and stuff that they would get that I don't. I know that here, there was a recent show that we watched that I was really trying to get into it, but it was just nothing. There was a show with Nobunaga being reincarnated as a dog. And it was
Nobunaga Cinnamon or something like that.
Cinnamon Nobunaga, yeah. And it was just, even with Nobunaga and with my limited knowledge of him, everything, like all of his, you know, the people that of that time period besides Nobunaga and a few others, I didn't even know who they were. So it was hard to follow that humor.
I wonder if we would do any better with cool-headed Hosotsuki.
Yeah, that one was a heavy one with a lot of folktales.
We should try that again. See, yeah. Now that we've got at least 8 years of under our belt now.
So yeah, it is probably the, but the great thing is besides those elements of, like, you know, folktales and history of Japan that they, you know, inundate their students with that they can follow completely. With the with most everything else, it's a lot of it's kind of slapstick. They love slapstick humor. This they love, you know, circumstances, accidentals, happenings, that kind of stuff that is really, really funny.
So. I do think that they do play a lot off of irony as well, which is one of the one of the things that it's a bit more
where somebody's messing with somebody else's bangs and saying that their bangs are messed up, and then come to find out their bangs get messed up, that kind of stuff.
It's, yeah, they tend to it's a bit more subtle when they do it, but it is one of those things that if you catch that humor, it is some of the funniest things. They love irony.
Yeah. Kaguya-sama, Love is War. Kaguya-sama, Love is War is your homework. Outbreak Company. There's so many.
But Goo's not, Nuichi-goo, not really available.
Yeah, Hari and Nuichi-goo is very crazy over the top. So keep that in mind. Outbreak Company is more otaku fantasy humor with a little bit of ecchi in there. Kaguya-sama, Love is War is more...
You'll understand the mechanic in there as well. Inner
combat of love kind of thing, which is hilarious. Lucky Star is very otaku geekdom humor. Some of that stuff is hard to follow as well, but that's a classic. And the last one I would suggest would be Nichijou. Nichijou is a classic comedy. But yeah, that one's really fun too.
So the last section we have is hot-blooded shonen epics. This is your bread and butter kind of, gonna be your bread and butter anime is the best way I can explain it. It's the one that most people kind of get stuck in anime because of, or at some point you're gonna bump into one of them and you're going to go in for the ride of your life because they go forever and a day. And there's no lack of content in these.
And these are the more mainstream ones, so you're probably going to, even if you weren't an anime, you knew about them, because they're the ones that do get on actual television in America. Dragon Ball, Naruto, Bleach. Did Bleach get on television? I don't think Bleach got on television, did it?
I actually want to say it did. I want to say it was on that Cartoon Network channel. The only one that I question is probably One Piece, but I think even that one got on Cartoon Network at some point. But that's basically what they are. They are just basically they're long running shows that just have really, really crazy arcs.
Long adventures.
The two kind of terms that you're going to want to know as far as shonen epics are concerned, is arcs and fillers. Arcs are basically, sections of the anime that kind of cover a long running theme, for lack of a better term. It's basically a miniature story within the broader story. So you will have kind of an introduction, which that will be the introduction arc, and then you'll have kind of a first quest, and then a second quest, and then a third quest. And these are actual stories within the story. So you will have a start, a middle, a climax, and an ending.
Arcs are a Western thing too. Just
okay. I've never really considered it that way. So
story arc.
But yeah, that's basically...
Filler is a Western thing. Might be.
Everything in America is a filler, so yes, it is a thing.
Everything's a filler in the West. It's all filler. Including that crap they put in the Twinkies.
But yeah, filler is kind of like an arc. Off the beaten
track kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like an arc, but it's a section that is filled to cover a lack of content is the best way I've ever I can come up with to explain it.
It's often used to kind of give the source material writer time, because there's a lot of these shows, they're kind of making them as the actual manga is being created. And there'll be at times where they get to this point where they're like, I'm not done with this arc yet. do a filler, and they'll sometimes have somebody else write a story, or he'll give a basic idea of what the story would be. And so it's kind of why fillers often feel so disjointed with it, is because sometimes it's not even them writing it, and it literally is them trying to put something in place so they can keep airing it while he gets, you know, finished with his current arc. So,
but yeah, that's your Shonen Epics. They are some of the funnest shows in the anime sphere, and they're some of the most hated anime in the anime sphere. Take it for what it is. So ultimately, why do we love anime? I love my characters. I think that they are quirky, lovable, cute, fun, headstrong, and in a lot of cases, they're heartbreaking.
I kind of mentioned it earlier, but it's mainly, it's technically, yeah, a lot of it has to do with characters, but a lot of it for me has to do with just the mind of the creators themselves. Like I mentioned before, I spent pretty much a good half of my life watching American shows and movies, and then the other half of it watching Japanese stories and movies, and the storytelling is so much more different, and the culture, of course, is different because it's a different country altogether. Not to say that what I see in anime is what is depicted in Japan, or they're exactly one-for-one scale, but it is a thing of this is a different... It's people from a different location telling a completely different side of things and telling these weird stories that I don't think I'd ever see if I stuck to just Western storytelling. And so that's where I get a lot of my enjoyment out of it, is just getting into their minds, these crazy cool stories. And yes, I will admit it here, and I'm not afraid to admit it here, Western storytelling has gotten very censored and restricted because we are, unfortunately, a society that gets angry about a lot of things really easily. And I feel Japan is kind of like this last remaining bastion of people that aren't afraid of doing things that are just kind of like, yeah, might be insulting to certain people, but I like that. I like this willingness to kind of just do crazy stuff that, yes, sometimes I'm not going to agree with it. Most times I'm not going to say that that's something that I would do or want to do. But I want these storytellers to tell the story they want to tell, even if I won't even agree with it, because I want to see what story they're looking to tell. So,
yep.
Yeah.
And then my second section would be stories, which I love their epic canvases. I love their vast worlds. I love their complex organizations. I love the intricate mechanics to different systems. And again, nuanced systems where they just have so many well thought out things that they like to do.
Yep.
So you're getting into anime. Find what you like. Embrace it. Branch out on occasion. This is important. This is very important. Do not get stuck in one section. If you don't, there's no lack of content. You, as long as you branch out on occasion and find something new, you're going to find something else that you'll like. And eventually you'll probably branch out and say, hey, what is this? And you'll find something else. There's so much. There's just too much content. There's, what did we figure, 50 shows a season coming out right now? There's no lack of content right now.
Yeah, 30.
30? Okay. This season
that we classify
this season only three, but
yeah, this season's only three of them.
there is an aspect of burnout, and this is something that you probably, if you're just starting, you're probably not going to bump into, but we covered it at some point because I do know it is a thing. We actually have some people who have talked about it that started. Came to us really early and they dropped off of anime not too long ago. And it's one of those things that you're gonna bump into this. Be careful with this because you don't want to ruin your love for anime because you got excited about it and you burned yourself out.
That was a thing that I kind of experienced in what would it be, like the late 2000s before 2010 or something like that, somewhere around that area, is I got to a point where I felt like all the shows were doing the same stuff. And I, if you listen to our earlier podcast, you'd probably hear me kind of just going, yeah, I watched this. It seemed like the same old thing. I gave up on it. Oh, yeah, this is this thing again. I got tired of it. Yeah, I watched three episodes. It did this thing again. Trope, move on. And that was kind of a burnout period for me. And I don't know exactly, because I think I was consuming a lot of anime at the time, or I was on the side. I don't remember exactly what happened, but it wasn't until, again, we launched Otaku Spirit when I was kind of going, okay, I want to start hitting all these shows again. And so for us, it's really a different situation than most people. Like, even if there is a show that I don't get too much out of it, what I do gain from that show is trying to find that one thing it does unique and tell you guys about it. That's the fulfillment I get even from a terrible show. Not necessarily it's terrible, but in most cases it's just a show that doesn't offer much but maybe one or two things. Is the fulfillment that I still get out of it is that I get to tell you guys about it. And so we're kind of a unique situation for most people. I don't suggest people really technically watch all the shows every season, because if I wasn't doing this podcast, I would probably get burnt out really quickly because I wouldn't get a fulfillment from watching a show that I didn't get much out of. Again, the fulfillment is from me being able to, you know, present that to you guys. So it is, I guess my suggestion really is to, yeah, I technically do agree that it is important to kind of branch out to multiple genres. But my key thing that I would say, it's fun to dive into different cultures, different genres, different top lists, and really hit a lot of the shows. And then when it comes time that maybe you want to get in with the conversation of the current culture, because if you get into the fandom, what you're going to find is a lot of people just want to talk about the new stuff. You might find a content creator here or there that likes to just do nothing but the older stuff, and that's fine. That's a cool thing to do there. But if you do want to get into the bigger community, what you'll find is a lot of them want to talk about the shows that are airing right now. They want to talk about each show, each episode, episode by episode, each week. The thing there that I would warn against is watching everything. I think it's important to taste test things, but don't watch everything every season, because you will get burnt out. And what you'll find is that a lot of the shows aren't meant for you. And that is a struggle that most people have that we've ran into, is that you find a lot of people that just get very disenfranchised by anime because maybe they don't like ecchi stuff, but they think that they have to watch all these shows, and they say, all these shows are just ecchi. But no, it's because those shows were meant for people that want the ecchi stuff. Over here is the serious show. Here's the Death Parade over here that's more serious. It doesn't have, you know, perverted stuff in it. Oh, you're watching Cross Angel over here, which is supposed to be for those people that want the ecchi stuff. There's K-On over here. It's more cutesy, and it doesn't have the perverted stuff. K-On typically doesn't really do that stuff except for a couple cases. Mm-hmm. So you can be safe over here. Go watch this one over here, or watch a fantasy show or something like that. So you do have to take in consideration that when you do see that big old list of 30 shows on anychart.net for the next season, unless you're, you know, more open to everything in that list, which not all of us are, expect that a lot of those shows aren't going to be for you. And that would be my warning. Even though I do appreciate testing.
I have no idea where I was. Getting burnt out is really easy to do, like Andrew was mentioning. So just be careful and start small. Don't go in and, like Andrew was mentioning, watch the entire season. Don't do that. If you want to do a binge session, build up to it. Don't jump right in. You will burn yourself out if you watch all of One Piece in the matter of a month and a half, and you're not used to doing that. I seriously would doubt you'd get past two seasons worth, but hey, some people do have more tolerance to that stuff. I reiterate again, don't get bogged down in one type of content. It is very easy to get burned out if you're only watching the same kind of show over and over and over again. If you are watching club shows, and the next show you watch is another club show because you think club shows are great, that's fine. But if you get into five different club shows, at some point you're going to burn out. If you intend to or not, you're going to ruin your taste for anime. And one of the downsides to a lot of people who get burned out on anime, they tend to all say the same crap. They all tend to say it's all the same shows. Are they really all the same show, or did you just get stuck in the same type of show because you thought that was the coolest type?
Yeah, I can kind of see that. But there is a thing of a lot of comedies and anime, they do like to use archetypes and certain tropes because, one, they work, and two, they're familiar and they're easy to write with. Mm-hmm. So you will sometimes find, if you do watch, yeah, like you say, a lot of the same genre, you're going to find that those certain little quirks, but again, they are technically quirks that are part of Japanese comedy and Japanese storytelling that they like to use. So,
and they make fun of themselves for using the tropes. Yeah. So, I mean, they already are very aware that they are doing it and they are used to it. But then again, Americans do the same thing. We've even made fun of ourselves for doing that.
We have a term for it. It's called memeing. So if you have a problem with that, then go tell the internet to stop memeing.
Okay, so
go jump on the internet and find memes and go trope. Trope.
Oh gosh. All right, so I thought that I'd give it a try and see if I could, because this is such a hard thing to do. I tried to find a couple of shows that I would consider kind of quintessential starter anime. This is
quintessential quintuplets.
Yes, the quintessential quintuplets is one of the most important shows to ever
watch. Why isn't quintessential quintuplets in the quintessential starter anime? Oh my gosh.
These are shows that I would be careful of. I'm not really, you have avoiding culture shock. I'm not real sure.
No, but the thing I would like to kind of add to this starter list that he's kind of, we've already mentioned a couple shows in this entire podcast, but I thought it would be important to kind of try to push this idea that we're not essentially telling people, here is these starter animes that you should watch because they're the best shows ever. It's more of a, I feel, an important thing about introducing people to anime, or even if you listening to this are trying to find shows to, you know, present to somebody that you want to get into anime, it's important to know that there's certain things that you should probably try to avoid. One of those being the culture shock aspect. Is you don't want to just throw something that has, like, Japanese all over that people won't understand if it's their first anime that you ever show to them. That's why Ghost in the Shell was so successful. That's why Cowboy Bebop was so successful, is they don't feel anime-ish. They don't feel like Japanese culture is being thrown at you that you won't understand. The Ghibli shows are perfect because they are, I mean, yeah, technically stuff like Spirited Away is kind of Japanese-ish. But even that one still can capture the Western audience because, and it did, because it's, it was so, it was a bestseller and blockbuster. But it was, it's those ones that kind of avoid really throwing too much at the person that they won't understand. And that's why I was thinking that you were calling it a starter anime because of that.
No, I acknowledge the culture shock thing. We beat this to death in one of our discussions at some point. Culture shock is something that really needs to be kind of considered in a lot of these, because I'm not really looking at it like that. I'm looking at it more along the lines of these are shows that capture the essence of this. I wanted to say thriller. It's not thriller. this genre. So when I think of cute girls doing cute things, I actually, Mitsuboshi Colors is probably better than K-On.
I threw Mitsuboshi on there because I felt that K-On was more of a culture shock, and that I thought Mitsuboshi Colors captures more of just the cute girls that are having fun in a playground. And I think they don't really hit too much in that one. Yeah, there's a point in which they do wordplay in it, But other than that, it feels very more natural and less, here's Japan! Girls playing guitars and having fun and sipping tea! Even though I absolutely love K-On!, I do think that something like Mitsuboshi Color is a little bit less of a barrier of entry, in my opinion.
And all that I mean is, it's just the essence of this particular genre. Death Parade, to me, is just the essence of psychological thriller. Go ahead.
I would also suggest Perfect Blue. I think that one is phenomenal.
As far as romance, I went ahead with From Me to You. I think that is an excellent just... It has the chase and the runaway. It goes back and forth. It loves to play on the will they, won't they. It absolutely captures the essence of frustration, not being able to communicate, young love, it misunderstandings. Everything is encapsulated in the show, and at the same time you have. You have characters who are underdogs coming into their own, becoming absolutely gorgeous characters. It has everything that you could ever possibly want in a romance.
I have nothing for romance because I'll admit I think romance is probably the weakest ever genre in anime. I have yet to find a romance that works from anime.
In fantasy, I did go back and forth because I think Record of Lotus is absolutely a quintessential, but it's also very dated. Grimgar Fantasy and Ash is absolutely phenomenal, and I think it does a little bit better, and it is in this generation of shows, and it is a great show, and it is absolutely capturing fantasy. And it is one of those things that just finds the essence and has weight to everything.
Is that the only fantasy that I have in my recent decade anime list?
Probably outside of like,
well, yeah, ReZero,
Outbreak Company and stuff.
Full Metal Alchemist, but that's a long show.
That one's pretty old as well, though.
It doesn't show its age at all, though.
That's true.
That show still looks amazing. Well, I do have that time I got reincarnated as a slime.
Yeah.
But no,
I think Grimgar does a little bit better with it.
Yeah, I think Grimgar Fantasy Nash is a phenomenal show. It does have the isekai aspect to it, but again, it doesn't really technically play off of it. And it's one of those shows where I wonder why I've even bothered at this point, but...
I'm sure that they'll probably hit it at some point later on, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I would go with that one. I'm good with that one.
And then I've got Ghost in the Shell. I think that this one is a timeless type show, and it does capture what the Japanese can do when they want to do sci-fi. They do phenomenal, and they question your existence. What makes a person a person? It still has cool tech and, they like to play with all that stuff, and it's just such a phenomenal show, and they do really well with that.
Another good one that I think is solid for a starter, Time of Eve. I think that's a fantastic starter. It's very short, simple, just like Ghost in the Shell. We're talking Ghost in the Shell, the original movie, by the way.
If we're going to go with the sci-fi side, that's not so much an action show.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, depending on what you think action is. Walking's an action. Sitting down is an action. No, sci-fi action... I know people would get mad at me. I would say All Noah's Zero, but... I think that was a phenomenally directed show. I would say, as usual, stick with the first season. So,
all right, and then we have this... Ghibli Studio titles. I'm assuming that was something you added, but you pretty much already
pretty much
covered
all Ghibli's. Yeah, all Ghibli Studio films are great starters, and if you're again introducing somebody, you can't go wrong with the Ghibli Studio one. Spirits Within is a solid one. Princess Mononoke is a classic. It's probably my favorite Ghibli film, I think. Yeah, I think that's my favorite. Yeah, I think that's my favorite. So, can't go wrong with Ghibli.
And then you've added Diving Deeper In, which I'm assuming is once you've gotten past the quintessential starter anime.
If you're feeling braver, I guess if you're feeling braver. But these are more of kind of like the something you'll probably find a lot of people kind of mentioning. If you're like, you know, crazy and you just want to dive into the most psychotic thing you can see, like you're just one of those types of people that just likes to dive right straight into the deep side.
And you want to see little girls when they get hurt.
Go crazy, dude. I think there's two different types of people coming into anime, and I think those are safe ones that we just mentioned. But I think there's some people that are just like, I want to see what you have to offer. Throw it at me. Evangelion, of course, is the one of those top ones that everybody just loves to death. There's very few people that you can see push against that one. Neon Genesis Evangelion, that's, of course, on Netflix now. You can get it. By the way, recently found out all the anime is going to be doing the Blu-ray release of it, which we didn't really expect anybody was going to get their hands on the physical release of it, but apparently that's happening. Bunny Drop, Slice of Life, really adorable. If you're looking for more crazy fantasy, Fate Zero is a solid one to get into. It gets really more crazy in the... It's kind of like a fantasy action psychological thriller, too, so...
ReZero is another one. Attack on Titan...
I can see a lot of Shonen Sai looking more for some crazy, just, blow my brain out kind of stuff is Attack on Titan.
I see, and the funny thing is I think that those are a lot of the shows that most people get drawn into anime for is just the darker side. Because, like I said, one of the things
that ones that make you stop and go, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Like, if you turn and you see just, a guy with flowers behind him and the girl's looking with Google eyes, it's like, okay. But if you walk by and you see like a crazy psychotic gigantic titan thing pick somebody up and chomp it in half, you're gonna go, what the hell is the show you're watching? It's a little bit different of an effect. Or girl picks up knife and starts hitting her head against it. It does turn the heads a little quicker. And any of the key shows, if you're looking more for like romantic comedy and heartbreak type of stuff, is great. Look up Key Studio, Clannad, Angel Beats, Planetarian, Air TV, Canon, Little Busters, they're all fantastic as well. I don't think you can... Here's a question. Do you think if I looked at Crunchyroll's popular list, I would find anything that I wouldn't recommend?
Popular? Yes, you'll find stuff that you can't recommend. I guarantee it.
One Piece, I can't say no. Black Clover, I didn't watch enough of it. My Next Life as a Villainess. They're yet pushing a lot of stuff that's technically,
Tower of God is not popular right now. There's no way. I'm sorry, I don't believe it.
It's the only one that's ended.
It's got to be.
It's one of the few that's actually done.
It's got to be something happened to. It's probably weighted by recent shows.
Because I don't see the Eighth Sun being all that great. I mean, with something like My Anime List, you're going to find a pretty solid suggestions in there. There is really a lot of avenues to really find a lot of great shows. I don't necessarily think that you're going to be too strayed by most people that is going to give you offerings. I think the only thing that really does become difficult with getting suggestions from people is just getting a lot of the pushback from other people. So just take everybody's word at what they mean. If somebody gives you an offering, listen to them and test it out.
Something to consider is everybody who makes a list, it doesn't matter, even us, we are coming at this with our own likes and dislikes. So even though I consider those particular shows quintessential,
quintuplets. Sorry, I can't stop thinking quintessential quintuplets.
There's six of them. There's not five. Now, if you take the Ghibli off of there, it would be five, and then it would be quintessential quintuplets.
They're not quintuplets.
But no.
They're not related in any way.
Even my list here is really based on what, like I said, what I consider the essence of that particular genre. But even then, there's still my bias coming in on that. I really love Death Parade. I really love From Me to You. I really love Grimgar Fantasy and Ash. So technically, my bias is probably weighing it a little bit higher on my scale. you may watch Grimgar Fantasy and Ash and find that
there's too many long scenes with music.
Yeah. And you and you decide that you have seen the anime that is the greatest fantasy of all time. However, Andrew may have a different idea of what is the greatest fantasy of all time that is the absolute essence of the fantasy genre in his idea. So each one of us will have our own tastes. And so when you go in and find the greatest 50 of all time, anime of all time, you're going to get a very, very different list. So take that into consideration, and you may not like their taste in anime. Nobody likes anybody's taste in anime. You have your own taste.
Just want a side note plug. I do technically have a top 100 suggestions shows podcast, as well as a 100 favorite shows of the last decade.
And your favorite anime probably isn't in that
list. So just saying, if you're looking for suggestions, there's literally, I mean, there's going to be some cross play there, but you're looking at, you know, a good 180-ish shows the suggestion there. So if you're looking for suggestions, there's plenty in there, and we technically talk about all those shows and what makes them special. So you can check out those two top 100 lists to get some suggestions. All right. Good outline, Chris. How much of it did you copy from the last outline?
Mostly just the terms. I just took out most of my blah blahs.
Most of my blah blahs. I didn't think you copied it until you said that you were going to take out the BLGL thing, and I was like, oh, okay. It's fine.
Well, all that did was it just gave you something to tease me about by making fun of all my paragraphs where I...
That would have been fun to make fun of your crazy paragraphs again. Again, check out the 23rd episode for that. Yeah, that's awesome. We'll put a pin in at the point. So as usual, though, I mean, if you didn't find an answer out of all of this and you're still confused, or you still need more suggestions, or if there's specific things you're looking for in your anime, you're always welcome to join our forums at otakuspirit.com up top there. Make a post, sign up, make a post, and I'm certain one of our amazing community members will jump in there and give you suggestions. Or you can contact us directly on Twitter. I have all our social media stuff on the main site of otakuspirit.com, so you can get a hold of us there. Give us your questions if you have anything. We're always welcome to help you with any issues you're having. Again, there's also a way to submit questions to us, and we can read them on our discussional podcast episodes. So, but yeah, the most important thing is just to enjoy it. Have fun.
Have fun.
Watch it's what you enjoy. If you're not enjoying it, don't watch it. Don't watch what people tell you that you need to watch when you don't enjoy it. Find what you enjoy, and don't let people sway you from enjoying what you enjoy. So, but yeah, again, we're at otakuspirit.com. You can go there for all of our anime, new and old, great community in the form links at the top, social media links on the right side, and all that good stuff, as well as all of our other podcast series, and the podcast series button at the top. You can click on that and get all these other 101 type shows we talk about. Again, top 100 lists, different genres, specifically like school shows, all that kind of stuff. We have those in there. We have a horror and psychological episode. So if you want to deep dive more into different genres, you can do it that way too. So yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed, and you all take care.
Oos!
Nobody knows who I really am. I never felt this empty before. And if I ever knew